Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening and good morning. It's going to be a very busy night. From the island of Guam to the west, I think the west, or maybe the east in a long way. I don't know. Eastward, actually, to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole and worldwide on the Internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Good morning, everybody. Or afternoon or evening. I don't know what to do about that. We're scattered across virtually the whole nighttime and the daytime, so it's getting harder. Anyway, in my quest to keep you informed of what's going on with the ratings on this program, in Denver, Colorado, we just got them, and we went from number 4 back to number 1, 12 plus, 25, 54 from number 9 to number 2. Wow. In Portland, Oregon, a bellwether market, I consider Portland a bellwether market, we went back to number 1 in all categories. Let me see, 12 plus. A 68.4% increase takes us to number 1, 2554, a 380% increase. You know, that's a big increase. Takes us from number 11 to number 1. And I've always watched Portland very carefully with regard to all of that. So I will continue to keep you informed. A couple of items before I bring on a special guest. The Hollywood writers are not going out on strike. Hence, all your favorite TV shows are apparently safe. America's jobless rate hits 4.5%. More people get in a case of the nerves about a possible recession because of that. A Navy spy plane, you know, the one on Hainan Island, could be repaired and flown home, according to U.S. officials. However, the Chinese have said, not going to be able to do it that way. An alternative would be to partially disassemble the plane and transport it, by barge or aircraft or whatever. So the Chinese are not being real friendly. On another count, too, the White House was crippled today for a period of time. The CIA also attacked they say they don't know who attacked them. We all know who it is. It's China. China advertised ahead of time there was going to be a hacker war, and it looks like they have cut loose. And so they are attacking our White House. Let's see, what do they actually say? Hackers caused mass slowdowns at the White House website today, the Bush administration said. They sent an enormous amount of data toward the site, leaving it completely blocked and or difficult to access for about 6 hours. It was a denial of service attack. That's when they just simply bombard it with so many requests for service that it gets bogged down and really can't do anything. So, obviously, it's the Chinese that have done it. And as I said yesterday, I think we've got some pretty good hackers. I've interviewed any number of them here on the air. You may recall Garth and some of the rest. So I know what we have in our hacker arsenal. And I would say a war is a war is a war. And so, naturally, I could never in a million years tell our hackers what to do, nor would I endeavor to do so. But I think they understand their path. And as far as I'm concerned, our hackers are much better than the Chinese hackers. We've been at it a lot longer. And the Chinese no doubt have government agents who are part of this. Wouldn't surprise me. But we've got regular old civilians here that are really good at this sort of thing, and so we'll see. Now, of course, if we are successful, if our hackers, that is, are successful, why, we'll never hear about it because they wouldn't publicize that sort of thing over there. However, they don't do that in communist China. They don't publish anything they wouldn't want their people to know. So, hackers, you consider what your path ought to be. But they're getting to our CIA and our White House from China. Now, they don't say it's from China, but what else could it be, really? They said they were going to attack us this week all over that airplane thing, and so they are. So I say, frankly, go get them. Kick their butts. Show them what real hackers can do. On another score, our network continues to endeavor to get hold of a Mr. Tito while he's still there and he's about to come back. Without luck, we call. It's really interesting. You call NASA and you're given a number in Russia, a phone number that generally does not answer. You ask NASA, can we interview Tito? No. Would you like to interview an American astronaut? Which was interesting. In other words, you could interview an American astronaut, any other astronaut, but you cannot talk to Mr. Tito, not over American equipment. For that, you've got to go to Russia. So we're talking now to the Russian embassy, and we'll see if we can wheedle our way around, but I'd say the odds are slim and none. I just think the whole episode is embarrassing for NASA, embarrassing for the United States, the U.S. government, the way we thought we did things, embarrassing all the way around. Very, very embarrassing. I think it's embarrassing that my network has to call Russia to get an interview with an American. I mean, after all, an American civilian is a kind of a unique thing, would make a really interesting interview, right? And yet, as an American network, our own government agency, the one that y'all pay tax dollars for, refers us to Russia to be able to talk to this American. Pathetic. Absolutely, in my opinion, totally pathetic.
Now we take you back to the night of May 4th, 2001, on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Now, there is a young lady named Leslie Keene that I would like you to meet, and she has written before some interesting articles in the area of ufology. And she doesn't write for a ufological, would that be a word? Ufological magazine? She writes for the Globe, the Mail, the Sacramento Bee, the Baltimore Sun, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the Sydney Morning Herald, the International Herald Tribune, the Providence Journal, the Nation Magazine, the Irish Independent, very mainstream, in other words. And she has just written an article about UFOs and aircraft, airplanes. You know, those big pressurized metal tubes that you go screeching through the atmosphere in if you're of the mind to get someplace fast. Now, Leslie Keene has written a brand new news story that is going to be breaking, I guess, tonight through tomorrow, and probably onto the wire services, about UFOs. And so I thought that I would have her on the air and tell us what she's done. Comes at an interesting moment, of course, because next hour you're going to be hearing from Dr. Stephen Greer, who's going to blow the lid off everything in Washington next week. So, let's see, is that next week? Well, kind of the 9th through the 12th, actually. We'll get the specific agenda dates or dates of announcements and who he's going to be meeting with next hour. But right now, I thought you might like to hear from Leslie Keene. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Art. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. All right. What have you written?
Well, as you mentioned, it has to do with airplanes. It has specifically to do with pilots and crew who have been witnessing amazing things from their airplanes for the last 50 years, and they have been basically too afraid to report them. And what got me interested in this subject was a new study that came out by scientist Richard Haynes, who probably many of your listeners are familiar with. And he is a NASA Ames research scientist, recently retired.
Mm-hmm.
He did a very interesting study of over 100 cases of pilot sightings in which aviation safety was affected. Now, this is out of a database he has of 3,400 cases, which is interesting in itself. These are basically sightings that have been reported by pilots and crew. But he selected a little over 100 cases in which there were specific effects on the craft that are aviation safety issues. And he's raising the issue in his study as to whether these objects are an aviation safety concern and should be treated as such by the authorities.
Well, they ought to be if they are. Leslie, that's 100 incidents affecting safety over what period of time?
Over the last 50 years.
For the last 50 years.
A whole range of cases. I mean, I've cited some cases in here that are in the 1990s, and there are some in the 50s. I tried to focus on the more recent ones in my story, but he's got a number of ones involving actual injuries in the airplane were in the 50s. For some reason, they're in the 50s, and there aren't any after that, but these are cases where the pilots, the UFO would be coming at the plane, you know, as if they were going to collide.
Right.
And the pilots would make a sudden dive or a sudden turn, and passengers would be thrown from their seats, and there were some injuries that happened. As
well, I think I probably have an answer for that.
Uh-huh.
It's only in the last, decade or so that the airlines have begun to say, look, use your seat belts, not only when we take off and land, but please keep them buckled while we're in the air, because they say you never know when we might hit some turbulence. And so now all of the major carriers advise you to keep your seatbelt on all of the time. So if
right.
a radical move would have to be made, you would think there would be less injury than back in the one wants to say good old days when you could just unclip it,
mm-hmm.
relax, have a cigarette, do whatever you were going to do, the good old days, I call them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that anymore. You stay buckled up right now.
Well,
and
maybe
so,
it's a good thing.
Well, that could be the difference.
I mean, and one point that's made, though, is that there is no assumption on the scientists' part who have looked at this information that there is any, quote, hostility on the part of the objects, that really the only danger is when the pilots sort of panic.
Sure.
And they make these impulsive maneuvers.
Absolutely.
And one of the points he raises is that if pilots were informed and they were trained, and this was a subject that could be discussed, they would be prepared, and then these kinds of dangers wouldn't happen. But it's not because there's any assumption or any expectation that a UFO is going to become hostile and decide to ram an airplane. It's much more that the responsibility lies with the pilot.
Uh-huh. Well,
if that makes sense.
Well, of course it does.
Yeah.
Could you describe a few of the more, or even one of the more serious incidents that would be representative of things in recent years involving U.S. aircraft?
Sure. And, you know, I hate to use the word serious. I'm not trying to instill fear, and I don't think there's any intention in the study to instill fear in anybody that, you know. But there are incidences of near misses where an object will be coming, you know, right at a plane. There's one case that I talk about, TWA Captain Phil Schultz. This was in 1981. He was flying from San Francisco to JFK, going over Lake Michigan. It was bright daylight, beautiful, you know, great visibility, and he sees this round silver metal object. He could see portholes, you know, what looked like windows. He was so close to this thing that he could see these dark portholes around the circumference of the thing. And the way he described it was that it descended into the atmosphere from above. And I have his handwritten report in which he's written all this stuff out. The handwritten report, when the question says, what do you think the object was, it says spaceship.
He actually wrote spaceship?
This is a pilot with, you know, this is a Korean War veteran of the Air Force. I mean, he had many, many hours of flight time, you know. That's the thing about pilots. They're very highly trained. They, you know, they are not kooks. And they care a great deal about their careers. And, you know, there's no question that what this man saw is what he saw. When he landed, he made a very, very detailed report, and he worked with Richard Haynes, and they went into the cockpit, and they reconstructed the whole thing and drew diagrams. And his sighting was quite extraordinary because he was so close to the object.
How did he fare after making the report?
From what I understand, he was fine, although the really interesting thing is that he made a statement, which is that he had never believed in UFOs. You know, he was a Korean War pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but he said, and this is a quote, "There's no doubt in my mind that it was extraterrestrial. We have nothing that can do what that object did."
And that was a TWA pilot named?
Phil Schultz. He was 54 years old at the time. This was in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing just came in from space, and then it came right for him. And as he actually ducked, he and his first officer braced themselves. They thought they were going to have a collision. And then suddenly it just made this sudden turn to avoid his aircraft, and it was so fast that, and it was round. I mean, this thing was moving, but it didn't have any wings, right?
Right.
I have a drawing that he did, and another really interesting thing he wrote in his report is that he said that he was supposed to, one of the questions was whether there were any atmospheric effects, and he wrote down, and I have it right in front of me here in his handwriting, "a bending of the atmosphere."
Oh, my. A bending of the atmosphere.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, whatever that means indeed.
But this was a very sophisticated pilot writing this information. So these are the kind of reports that have been collected. And what's really fascinating, Art, is that these pilots have a better view of these objects than anybody. They're right up there in the sky next to them. And they are so highly trained at looking at these things. And they have instruments on their planes, you know, that are often affected.
Yes.
They are in a unique position to make these observations
and
to provide data.
What about the co-pilot in that
case? Well, the other thing about it is there's almost always, probably always, at least two witnesses to
right.
these events.
Right.
Unless you're talking about a private plane, but the cases that Haynes was dealing with that I'm talking about in my article are not private planes. We're talking about passenger planes.
Right.
So you've got the co-pilot and you've got a flight engineer that are all up there, and they all see it. So that's another very, very, you know, valuable thing about this information that they can provide us, is that there are multi-witness sightings, and they are in a position to provide great data. And it's just a tragedy that they've been so ridiculed and humiliated over the years that they don't report these things anymore.
As you researched the story, I've always wondered about this, Leslie, and you may not have been able to find out, but I've always wondered, of the sightings that take place on U.S. commercial aircraft, I wonder what percentage actually get reported.
It's a great question, and I asked Richard Haynes that. He was a scientist who knows more about this than anybody, and you might want to have him on your show sometime.
I might.
But he said he couldn't say for sure. He's interviewed, you know, many, many pilots, but his estimate was somewhere between 20 and 40 are not reported for every one that is. But, you know,
that tells you an
estimate and a guess on his part.
Yeah, that tells you the magnitude of the pressure, though, that obviously would be on these commercial pilots not to report one of those.
Absolutely. And, you know, I interviewed a number of them myself, and they're all concerned about that.
Your article is being published where first?
Well, it just came out yesterday in the Providence Journal, which is the paper, you know, the mainstream daily in Providence, Rhode Island.
Right.
And the website, if people want to go and read it, is www.projo.com. That's projo.com. And you just click on commentary, and that you'll see the story in there. It's also going to be coming out in the San Francisco Examiner.
Oh, really?
Next week.
Next week.
On Tuesday, which is, you know, a daily here in San Francisco. And I've got it some other places, which I hope will pick it up as well.
And
really,
you never know,
like
the wire services.
Yeah, hopefully it'll go out on the wire service. If any listeners want it to be picked up by their newspaper, they can give them a call and see if they'll run it.
All right. I'll tell you what. I'd like to hold you over just a little bit past the bottom of the hour if you're able to
sure.
do that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you know that we've got Stephen Greer coming up next hour. You know Stephen?
I certainly do, and I've actually referenced a witness in my story who's coming forward as one of Stephen's witnesses next week.
Oh.
We'll be talking about one of the cases that I do write about in the story.
Oh, all right.
So there's a connection there.
Okay, hold on, Leslie. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. Can you imagine being on an aircraft and having something with windows descend from space, virtually bending the atmosphere, whatever that means, as a pilot or a passenger?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired May 4th, 2001.
It certainly is. Good morning. My guest is Leslie Kane. That's actually spelled K-E-A-N. And she's got a brand new article for the Providence, Rhode Island Journal, Providence Journal in Rhode Island, that may hit the wire services, and you're sort of hearing about it here first. My webmaster, I believe, is in transit from point A to point B. And so we'll get that link up on our website for you shortly. What a feeling indeed. Can you imagine encountering something in the air in one of those big jets? Now, here's the way you want to think about it, perhaps. Our government concluded Project Blue Book a long time ago. And basically, the conclusion of Blue Book was, whatever these things are, these UFOs, many of which they could not account for, they're not a threat to national security. Remember that? Well, they hover over missile silos. They've turned off ICBMs. They've started countdowns in Russia. They've been over countless military bases and nuclear installations and nuclear generating facilities. But not to worry, because they're not a threat to national security. If that's not a threat to national security, then what is? If things traveling through your airspace without permission are not a threat to national security, then what is? And the UFO community has pretty much always assumed that our government would have interest in incidents of these sorts because, well, by God, they actually are a threat to national security. Then another avenue you might want to take to be listened to, if national security isn't a problem, would be air safety. The safety of all of you out there. That's what this article is really all about.
Now we take you back to the night of May 4th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Once again, Leslie Kane. Leslie, your article begins by talking about a Siberian airport that was shut down for 1.5 hours when something flew over it. What's the deal there?
That is amazing. That was just last January in Agence France-Presse. AFP is a major wire service in Europe and Asia. It's as big as Reuters or AP, which we're so familiar with over here.
Sure.
They reported that this airport was shut down for an hour and a half when an unidentified, I'm reading it right now, an unidentified flying object was detected hovering above its runway. This was reported by Interfax, which is a news agency in Russia. A crew of a cargo aircraft refused to take off because they saw this luminescent object hovering over the runway. And the crew of another cargo plane refused to use the runway for the same reason. And then and 90 minutes later, the UFO took off and vanished. And that's what this story says by this very reputable news service. And you have to question why these kinds of stories do not get reported in the United States.
Well, for the same reason that I think Blue Book concluded there is no threat to national security. I don't know what you presume, Leslie. You presume that they can't do anything about it, so they don't want to talk about it. You know, in other words, the Defense Department never wants to appear defenseless. So that's one theory that's been bantered about. Another is, of course, that we already have knowledge of what these are, and either are working with them or have had communication with them, and so we don't worry about them because of that. I don't know. There's all kinds of theories going around. Do you have one?
No, I mean, I'm not in a position to know why. I guess the point I was trying to make was that I have observed as a journalist trying to write on this subject just how difficult it is to publish anything on it. When I did the story for the Boston Globe, boy, it was quite a saga to get that one out there. And that was about this extraordinary report that came out of France by the French military, by amazing high-level officials in France. And I assumed that this would be news, given the people that wrote it.
And so you were surprised when you got the when you kind of got the cold shoulder, I would.
Absolutely, and it just took so many months, and I was publishing in places where I've published articles before on other subjects, which were published within a couple of weeks, and this thing took months and months of editing and people getting nervous about it, and
really?
Yeah, it was just, it was amazing.
What did they tell you in the course of what amounts to a negotiation, I guess, to get a story printed? They must have given you comments. What kind of comments?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main, you know, I have great respect for the editor I worked with at the Boston Globe, but, you know, there was an effort to try to get this sort of element of ridicule into the story, because that's what people are used to reading, and that's what editors are used to dealing with, I guess. And with me, it was this very sensitive balancing act of trying to not allow any of that to creep in and trying to maintain my own integrity as a journalist when, you know, so it's a combination of them wanting to have some ridicule elements in it and also just their nervousness about publishing it at all because of the subject matter.
Now, do you think the effort to get the ridicule into the story is simply endemic in the in your industry right now, or do you think that there's more direction behind it than that?
Oh, boy, is that a good question, too. I mean, it's certainly endemic. There's no question about that. And I'm sure most people are aware of that. They don't hardly ever read a serious story about the subject. What's behind it is there's just so many possibilities. You may be familiar with the new book by Terry Hansen that deals with that very subject.
Yes.
News media complicity in the UFO cover-up.
Right, that's right.
You know, there certainly are close links between the bigger news outlets and the intelligence community and the U.S. government in this country, and there's all kinds of ways that they could be interacting to prevent something like this from happening. So, you know, I recommend that book. Anybody's interested in that question, by the way, it's excellent. But the interesting thing is also that the other countries are so different, and I do mention two in my story, both Chile and France, which actually have set up government agencies to study UFOs. And these are public, you know.
Sure.
The Chilean government just in 97 set up a committee. It's called the Committee for the Study of Anomalous Aerial Phenomena, specifically looking at airplanes, pilot reports, and it was set up because there were UFOs observed at a Chilean airport, seen by all kinds of civil servants and professional observers, and the government acknowledged this. It was the first time that the government of Chile acknowledged that, you know, the UFOs were flying around over Chile. And as a result, they set up an agency to study this.
Well,
this makes rational sense to me.
Yeah.
But it's not something the United States does, and the interesting thing is that the president of this government agency in Chile has made two efforts to reach out to the United States government through the embassy in Chile to try to have some cooperation with them, to try to jointly study this, to try to have a meeting at the Pentagon, and they get absolutely no response.
All right. There were a number of stories that I thought rather legitimate a few years ago about aircraft, in fact, recently even, being interfered with in Mexico City. In fact, one report of an actual collision. Did you do any research into that for this?
I didn't run across that one.
Oh,
that sounds fascinating to me. I'd like to know more about it.
Jaime Masson would be the person to talk to.
Absolutely.
And he can fill you in. But they actually had some collisions in Mexico. So anyway, I was kind of speculating myself about the angle of attack with this story. And my feeling is that though we can't seem to get them to realize it's a national security issue, or they won't admit it, or it isn't because they know, whatever the case may be, this would seem to be a different angle of attack. If you're talking about regular old airline safety,
right.
Is this sort of another way to get where you want to go?
Yes, I think it's another way to force recognition of the reality of the phenomena. I mean, that's one reason why, as somebody that believes that the reality of the phenomena should be officially recognized, when I saw this study, I thought, here is something that is going to require response. Because, you know, the data in this study is so legitimate, it does deal with an issue of aviation safety, which is of a concern to everybody. And, you know, it's going to have to be acknowledged and responded to. And for that reason, I thought it was very significant and needed to be presented in the press. And we'll see. So far, there hasn't been much response to this report. But, you know, and it's the report. By the way, if people want to look at this study by Richard Haynes, they can go to www.narcap.org. NARCAP is NARCAP, stands for the National Aviation Reporting Center on Anomalous Phenomena, and it's a fascinating thing to read, and I recommend people doing that.
All right. Well, bless your heart. I hope your story goes national. It's probably pretty good timing. A story like this has a better shot on the weekends than it does the week. So if it's going to go national, probably this weekend would be the time. So if there's any APUPI type people listening, they could go to the link, your link, and consider the story as is, huh?
They certainly could, yeah. And I thank you for being the one to first bring it to the public.
Leslie, thank you. Bless your heart, and have a good night.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
Take care. There you have it. Leslie Kane, folks, with a brand new article that ought to get press. Beyond local in Providence or San Francisco, but nationwide press. This is kind of interesting. Should one federal agency get sole custody of the universe? Sole custody of the universe. The question came up in a mysterious little item buried in President Bush's budget blueprint. It proposed, basically, that federal funding of ground-based astronomy research be switched from the National Science Foundation to NASA, which funds primarily research conducted in space. Now, that is really interesting, isn't it? They're going to lay more on NASA. From the National Science Foundation to NASA. As more and more power seems to get consolidated with any things that have to do with space in the hands of NASA. And by the way, going back to the Tito subject for a moment, here's one of my listeners who wrote to the White House about all of this. Actually sent an email. That was back when the server was working, before the Chinese got to it. Art, I sent the email below to the White House in hopes of getting some sort of an answer to the question that you aired on the show last night about Mr. Tito. Dear sir, I have a question for you in your office. Why is NASA acting like a child when it comes to Mr. Tito? I know this man has worked for NASA in the past, and he is not your run-of-the-mill dummy, and he must pay a very large sum in taxes, so why does a citizen of this country have to go to Russia to buy a ride for $20 million? Does NASA have so much money, our tax money, that they don't need the extra money? Or is it a move to help our enemy, the Russians, and their space program? Well, read enemy, I guess, in quotes. With all the bad press that this country has in the past, why is a government department acting this way? And they immediately answered, my listener, by saying, thank you for emailing President Bush. Your ideas and comments are very important to him. Unfortunately, because of the large volume of email received, the president cannot personally respond to each message. However, the White House staff considers citizens' ideas and concerns important. Again, thank you for your email. Your interest in the work of President Bush and the new administration is appreciated. Sincerely, the White House Office of E-Correspondence. But you've got to give the listener an E for effort, that's for sure. And then just one more little item here for you. I'm trying to pack in what I can. Dear Art, I'm a long-time listener to your program, and I confess I do not believe in UFOs or anything in particular regarding the paranormal. Having said that, I feel I should relay this story to you. Last night, May 3rd, our office manager was driving to a small community in the NASS, that's N-A-S-S, Valley, which is complete wilderness, with the exception of three small villages. At about 10 p.m., he was passing through an area known as the Lava Beds, which is a vast section of forest which was covered by lava during a volcanic eruption about 190 years ago. As he was entering the wooded area once again, he saw a creature standing on the side of the road. It was covered with black hair and appeared to be about 7 feet tall. As he approached and illuminated the creature with headlights, it turned to face him and slowly walked away from the road and into the thick forest. He was able to drive within 15 feet of it and got a very good view. He called us as soon as he arrived, was shaken up over the whole thing. He knows many of the native elders in the area, and they all believe in the existence of Sasquatch. Now, I'd not normally believe a story like this, but I've known him for years and trust that he, in fact, saw this creature. So there you have it, yet another report that likely will not see publication anywhere, I would imagine. Not a chance. What do you think? We're going to be talking a lot about this kind of thing and why the press does what it does or doesn't do in so many cases, and why, you heard Leslie say it, she writes for our nation's top publications, why the ridicule factor has to be a part of the story. And where did that concept come from? Is that sort of, as I asked, just something that is done? I mean, anytime you've got a UFO story, you've got to take a wisecrack and a laugh about it, or you can't print it. Now, where did that come from? Or where is that still coming from? You've got to wonder a little bit, or a lot. An astronomer at the University of Arizona's Lunar Planetary Institute was conducting a routine sky survey on Monday with his colleagues when he spotted a change in the comet named C2001A2. Like most comets, A2 showed up in a telescope as just a very bright spot, which represents the core or nucleus of the object. When the comet's near the sun, when it gets near, fuzzy halo, of course, grows around all comets as charged particles streaming out from the sun burn off frozen gases, dust, and what have you in the core. Nearer the sun, tails begin to form. Usually in the middle, you just see a little bit of fuzzy point source. And then all of a sudden it looked a little funny, and then kaboom, apparently this comet split in two and increased in brightness by about 100-fold. Now, think about that, 100 times brighter. So something interesting is going on out there, and something interesting generally occurs, you may have noted, because I certainly have, when comets get near our sun and or plow into our sun, it seems to have an interesting, disproportionately gigantic effect. I mean, normally you would think that a comet, which is just a dirty ice ball, plowing into our sun, which is a really big fiery ball of nuclear contiguous reaction, would just sort of go, and there wouldn't be any effect or very little effect. You would expect just nothing, really. It's like dropping another drop of water into a bucket, you know, there's one more drop of water, right? Would eat that comet alive. But interesting things seem to occur to the sun when comets either pass very close to it or hit it. Nobody exactly knows why or what the planetary or cosmic effects are. Nobody really exactly knows. But for some reason, very odd things happen. Very disproportionately large things happen when comets either get near the sun or plow into the sun. Nobody really knows, but I just thought I'd let you know this particular comet is getting really interesting. When they split like this and get really bright, and they're streaking by our sun, you might want to hold on to your belts. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Coming next, disclosure, the real thing, it's finally coming, Dr. Stephen Greer.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
Covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, that all these things in our memories haunt, and they use them to help us to find.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
Want to take a ride? Of course, I snatched that from the movie Contact, which I dearly loved. But these days, if you want to take a ride, I guess you can call Art Bell or maybe the Russians, but that's about it. Coming up in a moment, as they say about movies, years in the making. We've talked about it with Dr. Greer for years. But, ladies and gentlemen, between the 9th and the 12th, there's going to be, finally, disclosure. Hundreds of witnesses available. I don't know how many are coming forward and what they're going to say, but we're going to learn a little bit about all that tonight. I know there's going to be a big confab press release at the National Press Club in Washington. and other events surrounding what's about to happen. And Dr. Greer is going to tell you all about it. Dr. Stephen M. Greer is the founder and international director of the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, CSETI, a lifetime member of Alpha Omega Alpha, the nation's most prestigious medical honor society. Dr. Greer is an emergency physician and a former chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Caldwell Memorial Hospital. Dr. Greer, as director of CSETI, has led research teams throughout the world investigating the existence of ETI and on several occasions has successfully established preliminary contact and communication with extraterrestrial spacecraft at close range. Dr. Greer has directed the Disclosure Project as a special project of CSETI. The Disclosure Project has interviewed over 6 military, government, and intelligence witnesses to UFO ETI projects and events. The testimony of these witnesses in print and via press conferences and meetings is going to be used to educate society about the secrecy surrounding this whole issue. The environment-saving technologies that have been suppressed and the fact that humans have been using advanced weapon systems to target UFOs. Dr. Greer has written Extraterrestrial Contact, that's his book, The Evidence and Implications, which has been acclaimed as one of the most comprehensive, insightful books on the subject. His new book, Disclosure, Military and Government Witnesses to the Greatest Secrets in History, will be released mid-May this year, coming right up, in other words. This book is going to include edited transcripts of several dozen witnesses interviewed for the Disclosure Project with Dr. Greer's commentary about their testimony. In other words, obviously, all of this is going to occur at once. He has met with and provided briefings for senior members of government, military, and intelligence operations in the U.S. and around the world, including senior CIA officials, Joint Chiefs of Staff, White House staff, senior members of Congress, and congressional committees, senior UN leadership and diplomats, senior military officials in the United Kingdom and Europe, and cabinet-level staff members of the Japanese government, among others. Dr. Greer, I'm sure you've seen all over the place, Larry King, CBS, BBC, NTV in Japan, sightings, encounters, TV programs here in the U.S. He has addressed tens of thousands of people live at conferences and lectures around the world, including the International Convention for Mensa, the High IQ Group, the Institute of Noetic Sciences Board of Directors, and the Sierra Club. Dr. Greer is married. He and his wife, Emily, have 4 daughters and reside in the Charlottesville, Virginia area. In a moment, you're about to hear what's about to happen.
Now we take you back to the night of May 4th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
And now to Dr. Stephen M. Greer. Long time coming, huh, Dr. Greer?
Well, it has been, and I want to point out this is, in a sense, the culmination of so many people's work over the last 8 or 10 years, and it's really the kickoff of what we are calling the Campaign for Disclosure. And in a memo I've sent the President this week, we have stated that we will persist in this campaign until its goals are met.
Just before we jump in, as you know, I mentioned to you, you didn't hear it, but I interviewed Leslie Kane last hour, and we had a very interesting conversation. You may wish to comment on this aspect of it. She said in a previous story that she wrote, and I presume this one as well, it was really hard for her to get these into the newspapers and then ultimately onto the wire services. Very difficult because they wanted to keep introducing the ridicule factor into the stories that she wrote, the ridicule factor. And I asked her, is it simply endemic, you know, in the industry you're in, that ridicule factor has to be in there as sort of a laugh with the whole story, a very serious story about airline safety, or do you think that there is something more sinister in the background, insisting that the ridicule factor be introduced. And I wonder if you have thoughts on that matter.
Well, in reality, the milieu, the general milieu of this entire subject has been conditioned over 50 years to be ridiculed and to be the stuff of silliness. And that was deliberate, and it has been deliberate. It's been a counterintelligence program. And we have CIA documents that discuss the fact that this was going to be made fun of, that they were going to get Disney Studios to make cartoons about it, and that it was a matter of psychological warfare, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. And these are documents dating back to the 50s, and these are uncontested, authentic U.S. government CIA documents. So, yes, the subject has been deliberately conditioned in that way. For example, my wife's brother is married to a woman who for some years was the city editor of the Boston Globe.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, look, this is a blue blood paper. It's a very serious mainstream paper. We wouldn't cover this subject whether it's true or not because we don't want to be identified with the tabloids where this subject usually is reported. Now, in addition to that, there is something a little more sinister. I have had confirmed to me from a national security source that there are at least 43 NSA and other agency people on the payroll of major media around the country and around the world who spike or kill these kinds of stories or spin them. And I have always suspected this, but just this week I've had that confirmed to me. Now, if true, this is an explosive allegation because it means that the Fourth Estate, which we rely on as one of the checks and balances in our democracy, has really been corrupted by people who are playing both sides of the fence, who appear to be legitimate journalists, but in reality have deep ties to the intelligence community. And I quite frankly believe that is the case, although saying that, I would say that more importantly, the general atmosphere that's been created around the subject of ridicule has been so habituated that it's very hard to break through it. What we're trying to do by bringing forward so many very credible military intelligence and scientific people at one place and at one time and persisting in doing that over the next few months is to try to change that atmosphere so that it begins to be looked at in a serious way by the mainstream media and by the scientific, political, and diplomatic communities.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if the ridicule factor can be overcome or not with your presentations. Again, we'll get to them in a moment. I want to ask you one other thing.
Yes.
Regarding today's headlines, and that is Mr. Tito, who's on our space station right now.
Right.
I find it embarrassing, personally, I guess, for me and for the U.S., that as a broadcast network, and I'm pretty big now, you know, we're up around 500 affiliates, pretty good size.
Right.
That Mr. Tito, number one, has to go to Russia, our former enemies, to pay $20 million to go up on the International Space Station that the U.S. taxpayers have the biggest stake in, as far as I know, percentage-wise.
Oh, yeah.
And as a network, we decided, well, it would be fun to interview Mr. Tito while he's up there. So we contacted NASA, and I'm embarrassed to say they gave us a phone number in Russia. You want to talk to Mr. Tito? Here's a phone number in Russia. See what you can do.
Right.
That's a little strange, Dr. Greer. I mean, just strange all the way around, in my opinion. What do you think about this whole thing?
Well, we live in an era where the almighty dollar has become even more almighty, and unfortunately, this is one of the real problems. I think that whether you're talking about this particular case with the space station or the general atmosphere, I'm speaking tonight from Washington, D.C., where I am inside the Beltway in the district, and what John McCain pointed out in the presidential election is so true, and that is there is just an incredibly powerful corrupting influence of large amounts of money from corporate locations. And I'll tell you, the UFO matter and the extraterrestrial issue is really more a corporate issue than it is a governmental one. And unfortunately, when you start talking about a subject that can step on the toes of a multi-trillion-dollar fossil fuel economy,
mm-hmm.
If it's disclosed, you then begin to trigger not only massive national security alarm bells, but the big corporate and special interest money. So it is a problem, and I think that we've reached a point where the sense of noblesse oblige, the sense of some kind of duty that transcends just crass materialism and influence peddling, we've just reached a point of almost no return. It is distressing. I agree with you. It's an atmosphere that I hope that can be changed. It needs to change if we're going to move on to the next chapter in human history.
Well, there are, of course, there's a core of people that think Mr. Tito is not particularly welcome there from our point of view because of the possibility. Of course, you get a great view up there. And were you to see something, you might not be as controllable as a trained astronaut, or cosmonaut, for that matter. Just a thought.
Well, of course, I mean, there are a lot of technical issues there. I know as an emergency doctor, you know, when we're doing something that's a high-risk emergency procedure, you don't want anyone around that could possibly do something that could make that go bad. So, you know, there are a lot of my uncle was the designer, the senior project engineer, I should say, for the lunar module. And there were, you know, I can't imagine that they would have wanted someone not really well trained to have been involved with that operation. Apparently, this particular thing, he seems to have been briefed adequately. But
well, he wasn't just anybody, actually. He was in NASA for a long time. And,
right.
He's not just any Joe.
Right.
So, I don't know. The whole thing is somewhat mysterious.
Yeah, well, maybe it's the beginning of space tourism, as it's been called. So,
Or the end.
Or the end, one or the other. That's right.
All right. So, I'm trying to get the date straight for what you're going to do. There are various dates. So, I've seen several dates. So, I assume there are various dates in one venue or another when you're going to let loose with what is about to occur.
That's right. On May 9th, this coming Wednesday, at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, there will be a press conference at the National Press Club Ballroom in Washington, where there will be about 22 or 23 military and intelligence witnesses who will be identified, name, rank, serial number, and they will give brief statements about their testimony, extensive transcripts of their testimony, and video excerpts of their testimony that we have recorded will be released. And then we will make a statement about our plans to persist in asking for open congressional hearings and also to move this material out into the public through the media over the next few months. I want to emphasize this is a campaign that we're beginning. You know, nothing happens in one or two days, particularly in Washington. However, I can say with great confidence that the amount of evidence we have, the testimony of these witnesses is conclusive. Any intelligent, objective person who would see their testimony and read their transcripts will conclude that we are not alone, that there have been highly compartmented projects dealing with this subject for many decades, that it has vast implications for the future of the human race, and that there are advanced energy and propulsion systems that, if they could be declassified, would correct the energy crisis permanently and would solve the global warming and other pollution environmental problems that we are facing. And this is a very major issue. Of course, getting people to focus on it is another matter, and I'm sure it's going to be a process, not just one day. But I will say that of the 22 to 24 people who will be here in Washington and who will be gathering here on Monday and Tuesday, there are only a quarter of the people, one-fourth of the ones we have already interviewed on videotape and have transcripts for now about 70 of them, which will be coming out in this book you mentioned called Disclosure in mid-May. And I will also say that they are only that 100 number is only a quarter of the 400 that we have identified that could be subpoenaed in open congressional hearings. We have done this, as you know, as a small nonprofit with nominal funding and volunteer staff, totally volunteer staff. The dedication and the sacrifice people have made to make this happen is Promethean. It's extraordinary, really, and I'm very indebted to all of them. But the people who are ready to come forward, if we can get open congressional hearings, are even deeper and more sensitive than the ones that are coming forward now. Now, to give you an idea of the kind of people coming forward at this press conference, one of the men who will be there is a senior, is the fourth highest ranking man in the FAA during the Reagan years.
Really?
Who was the head of accidents and investigations for the Federal Aviation Administration, who has testified on tape and will be named and present at this event that he confirmed and studied the event that happened in Alaska in 1986, that this was a major investigation by the FAA when this Japanese airline 747 was encountered a UFO four times the size of a 747, that it was tracked for over 30 minutes on radar, that it was on military radar, that he did a full briefing for a day at the FAA headquarters for the administrator of the FAA, and that three CIA agents were present, three FBI agents were present, and Ronald Reagan's scientific advisors were there. At the end of the meeting, the CIA officials stood up and said, this meeting never happened, this event never happened, and they confiscated all the materials, or so they thought. In reality, this man kept the originals and have turned them over to us.
Oh,
we're talking radar tracings, videotapes of the radar tracings, transcripts of the pilot talking to air traffic control.
I remember that there was a wire story, of course. It ran about this incident.
Yes,
but
and it was
didn't...
hushed up. It was
That's
hushed
right.
up.
Yeah. That's right.
Now,
it broke
story.
And then it unbroke.
This man's testimony establishes the reality of this object. It was on radar. The reality of the cover-up, the fact that the CIA attempted or thought that they had confiscated all the materials and that this subject was then never pursued. Now, he's just one of 20-some people
no,
who
let,
be
let's
there.
No, let's stick with him for a second. You're yep. really telling me this fourth highest man during the Reagan years
yep.
in the FAA
very senior
he is going to come publicly in front of the press and say, this all happened, we've got the evidence. And the CIA stood up at the end of the meeting and said, this never happened. He's going to say that?
Yep, and he's already said it. You should read the transcript of this, by the way. Transcript, part of it is already up on a website, which is www.disclosureproject.org, disclosureproject.org. And there's a 70-some page executive summary of our 500-page briefing document that we're giving to the congressman and others that we're briefing this week. And this is really extraordinary. Now, again, he's just one of these witnesses, and there are others who are even more extraordinary in the sense that they have dealt directly with extraterrestrial materials, have been on the NBC, Nuclear, Biological, and Chemical retrieval teams that serve as a cover for retrieving extraterrestrial devices
Doctor,
and bodies.
Doctor, hold it there for a moment.
Yep, they're going to be there, and they're named.
All right, we're at the bottom of the hour. Can you imagine that? Now, that should be something the press can sink their teeth into if they want to, right? I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
Far, we've been traveling far. Without a home, but not without a star.
Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
They're going to drop the bomb 9 a.m. in the morning, Washington, D.C. time, I guess, at the National Press Club ballroom. Any reporters who want to be there to hear the fourth highest member of the FAA during the Reagan years say the CIA told him the meeting they just had never happened, well, you'd want to be there.
On Premier Radio Networks, tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
I suppose, from the CIA's point of view, just when you think you've got all the evidence burned, hidden, safely locked away, some son of a gun turns out to have saved it all. Dr. Greer, welcome back. You began to mention more, that it would go from there, and that you've got people who are going to actually talk about landings and crash retrievals and things like that?
That's correct, and with corroborating documents and other materials. And again, I emphasize that it's the weight of the evidence. We have, for example, two Air Force officers, lieutenant colonels, who did not know each other at the time, who have corroborated the Malmstrom Air Force Base intercontinental ballistic missile overflight and hovering of UFOs, during which there were at least 16 intercontinental ballistic missiles rendered inert and unlaunchable.
That's not just a myth, huh?
That's not a myth. We have the documents, we have the witnesses, and they will be there. We have the testimony of a senior Atomic Energy Commission official, a full-bird colonel, who stated that we were planning and actually attempted to launch a nuclear weapon into space to explode it on the moon to demonstrate to the Soviets our power and prowess technologically, and that it was intercepted by extraterrestrials because they did not want us putting weapons of mass destruction in space, because apparently this violates basic common sense universal laws.
Can you back up just a little bit and give me a few details on Malmstrom?
Yes, this was the date in the 1960s, I believe, mid to late 60s. I'd have to look at my notes. There were several events that happened at the Strategic Air Command launch facilities, not only the launch control facilities, but on the Echo flight, but on Bravo flight, also over the actual missile silos, where there were UFOs that were hovering, were spotted and reported. Apparently, the same thing we found out was going on over in Russia, and apparently the extraterrestrials were trying to say, please don't blow up your beautiful planet with these stupid weapons, and know this, we are not going to let you blow up other planets out in space. And essentially, they demonstrated that they felt that it was unwise for us to have this these weapons that could destroy the entire Earth. And 16, at least 16 intercontinental ballistic missiles that morning went down simultaneously. There was some sort of electronic process that happened where 16 of our intercontinental ballistic missiles were rendered unlaunchable.
That's quite a coincidence.
Yeah, 16. Not a coincidence. And interestingly, the a man who was asked by Boeing, who made the missiles, to investigate what happened was ordered by the Air Force to stop the investigation because they did not want it to go any further, and they tried to keep it secret. So this is the kind of thing, you know, these are very sober.
And you've got two lieutenant colonel level people that are going to testify about this?
Correct, and who will corroborate that this happened, that the commander-in-chief's Strategic Air Command sent out a telex that morning, very concerned about it. And one of the people who was actually in the launch control facility when it happened and saw the missiles go down will also be there, and we have will be at this press conference. Again, you know, one of the things that are pointed out by a number of these military men is that these were men who, in whose hands was the fate of the free world and weapons of extraordinary power. And on any other issue, of course, they had top secret clearances, crypto. On any other issue, they would be considered to be extremely credible. But on when it comes to UFOs, people would like to discredit them, but when you put so many of them together in one place, Art, it becomes the weight of the evidence becomes inescapable.
Well, one way this is a very big story is if there is a threat to national security. Blue Book concluded there was really no threat to national security. I've never heard any change of position from the government since that time, except, I suppose, to silence anything that would make it appear to be a national security issue.
Well, I think that, you know, it's a parsing of words. There is no actual threat to the national security because, obviously, if these life forms were hostile, contrary to the mythology of the UFO subculture, they would have simply terminated our civilization a long time ago. There's no evidence they're hostile, and so therefore there's no objective threat. However, it was a matter of great national security concern because it was obvious they did not want us putting weapons in space, and were expressing their deep concern over these weapons of mass destruction that were being aimed against the various countries in the world, both by the Soviets and the United States. And it shows that they have deep concerns while they're not hostile themselves. And no hostile actions were taken. These military witnesses say nobody was injured. There was no act of hostility. But it was quite obvious they were showing their deep concern for human hostility. And I think this turns the whole issue on its head. I think, in a sense, the extraterrestrials have held up a great big cosmic mirror and have said, humanity, you need to look in the mirror and see what it is you've become and where it is you are going.
Perhaps so. But even under the loosest definition I can think of, if 16 of our ICBMs shut down simultaneously,
right?
If that isn't national security, then
oh, of course. Well, obviously,
what is?
They were extremely concerned, and we have the documents to prove it. Now, the other thing I have to comment on: one of these same military officers, at another time prior to this event in the early 60s, had a top secret crypto clearance. When a message came across that he personally saw, describing the crash of a UFO on the island of Spitsbergen, Norway. Now, this has been rumored for years. This is a man, top secret, SCI, crypto clearance, who was in the crypto center when the message came across that stated that a UFO had crashed on Spitsbergen Island and that a scientific team was en route to retrieve it and study it. This man saw that, and he is testifying openly, name, rank, and serial number, that happened.
Some Mark in Texas sends this and asks, have all of these witnesses considered what this is going to do to their careers and lives? It's incredible. Is this going to be televised?
Well, that's up to the media, and I would say that if there's anyone in the media listening, we would invite them to come and televise it, whether it's CNN, C-SPAN. They have been invited. Whether or not they respond, we don't know. We don't control the media, as you know. Mm-hmm. They have been invited. We have a professional media team here in Washington dealing with this, and we are hoping they will. If they don't, people can see it. It will be broadcast on the Internet live, and it will be archived live at the National Press Club Archive. Now, so anyone who wants to see this entire two-hour press conference at the National Press Club live, it will be webcast, and we are quite frankly spending a fortune to get this done so people can log on and see it in real time.
Excellent.
If they want to find out how to do that, they just get on our website, www.disclosureproject.org.
All right. The first part of the question, the witnesses, obviously you've talked to them. Have they carefully considered their careers and lives in, you know, coming forward in this very public
sure.
way?
Yeah, I'm sure they all have, and we've had long discussions. You know, I've been dealing with many of these men and some of the women for 5 and 6 years, 10 years, some of them, actually, that I've known. Look, the stakes are so great for our civilization, not only the technologies that are being withheld, but the very dangerous trend towards accelerating the weaponization of space. Let me tell you, and they know what the stakes are. They know that if we don't get this fixed, we are headed for a worst-case scenario, that we simply must get the public, the media, and our diplomatic people involved before some of these covert projects take us further down the path of insanity. I have to say also that they are very concerned that the democratic processes of constitutional, congressional oversight, and even presidential oversight have been deliberately frustrated. One of the witnesses is a brigadier general, currently is a brigadier general, and a lawyer. He's a brigadier general in the Army Reserves. He is a practicing attorney. He's a dear friend of mine. He worked with Eisenhower in the last couple years of his tenure as president, and he states that the President Eisenhower was extremely concerned over the secrecy, and so much so around this subject, and knew that they were losing control of it. And the words he used were, we knew that this whole matter would not be in the best of hands, and so it has turned out to be. It is a chilling quote from this brigadier general. And I will, you know, remind people that President Eisenhower in January of 1961 essentially said that we should beware the influence of the military-industrial complex and the disastrous rise, quote-unquote, I'm quoting here, of misplaced powers.
Yes.
You know, so I think that, you know, these people understand what's at stake here, and we are standing together, and I think that they are mature enough to understand that, yes, there could be a lot of ridicule, there could be all kinds of issues, but you can't really consider your own self. I have never considered my own selfish situation in doing this. My question is, when I look in the mirror, is this the right thing to do? And the answer is yes. I'll give you another example. One of the men coming forward is a Master Sergeant Air Force who dealt with this issue, who then became a very deep National Reconnaissance Office, NRO, operative. And he had a near-death experience as an elderly man and had a stroke. And when he survived that, he said, you know, I am not going to take this to my grave. He felt, he's been a Christian all his life, he says, I know that God wants the public to know this and that the secrecy around this has gotten out of control. And so out of a moral act of courage, this man, who's quite elderly, is coming forward. So there are many, and he'll be at this national press conference.
All right. Well, that's where the brigadier general you quoted, will he be there?
Unfortunately, he's tied up in a court case and can't get free. We hope that he will be here for Saturday the 12th. By the way, you, Art Bell, and the public are invited to a symposium in Washington on May 12th. It will be at the Washington Hilton Hotel. You must register in advance. It is free. We are charging nothing for any of this. I have
really?
To emphasize, this is not a UFO conference where you pay your bucks. This is free. We're doing this out of funds we have raised from donors. And the public, anyone listening to this who would like to come, may do so, but they have to get on our website and ask to be put on a list, because we have only about 300 seats. And these witnesses, not all of them will be there that day, but most of them will be there presenting. And we will have, of course, a whole day, almost 12 hours of presentations on May 12th, Saturday. That's a week from tomorrow. So people wanting to participate in that should let us know.
What kind of information is this Master Sergeant got?
Oh, God. It's just explosive. Not only up-close events that he was involved with while he was in the Air Force, but the confirmation of the retrieval of extraterrestrial vehicles and life forms.
Boy.
He was personally involved in a team that went around and intimidated civilians and military people who saw things to convince them, quote, that they did not see it and to be quiet. He also confirms that if he and his team didn't convince them to shut up, that there was a National Security Agency bunch that came in who really, quite frankly, kicked ass and took names. But it's extensive. It's not just one event that this man knows about. It's a great deal of information. And he has said, you know, we have got to stop firing at these UFOs, that they're not the problem, we are. We have another man who was on a retrieval team who says that, you know, in the scheme of things, they're not the enemy. We become the enemy to the whole universe by our reckless behavior. And I want to say one other thing. We have Wernher von Braun's right-hand person and personal spokesperson for the last 4 years of his life. Wernher von Braun was the father of modern space exploration and rocketry. And this spokesperson is testifying openly that Wernher von Braun told her that we would hoax an alien threat so that we could justify weaponizing space.
Wow.
This was in 1974, and let me tell you, that prediction has come to play. Wernher von Braun was dying of cancer and on his deathbed begged this woman to do everything she could, and she will be there. This is one of the highest-ranking people in aerospace history. She has testified before Congress on other issues. She's a very credible person, and she's going to be there standing up saying, we have got to look at this picture in a broader way and make some serious changes in some of the things that we're trying to do right now.
And none of these people are going to be behind screens with voice alterers or like that. They're all going to stand up, and their names are going to be right out
there. Yes, sir. And in fact, on May 9th, if you get on our website, their names will all be revealed. Right now, that document has their names sanitized out of them. But on May 9th, those names will be up there. They will be at the National Press Club, name, rank, and serial number. And I will tell you, out of the over 100 witnesses that I have interviewed in the book that's coming out that people can already order, it won't come out for another month or so or a couple weeks, but we have 70 transcripts in this book, and only two of the 70 are not named. In other words, more than 95% of them are named. So, yeah, this is where everyone's stepping forward. And what we're encouraging is that as this happens, if there are people listening who are also military and government people who have been involved with these kind of projects, they should contact me, because there's going to be wave two and then wave three and then wave four of this. And we will persist on this disclosure until it is known and some of the excesses are corrected and the beneficial aspects of this whole phenomenon can begin to lift humanity to a new chapter. We're stating on May 9th that the game is up, the game is over, it's time for a new chapter to open.
Can you state with any certainty at all, Doctor, and I understand what treaties are in place right now, can you state with any certainty at all that nuclear weapons are not now orbiting above our heads? Either by the Russians or our own hands?
Well, whether or not they're nuclear weapons, they're actually weapons that are more dangerous than nuclear weapons. And I have more than one witness who has confirmed that these weapons are already in space, that they are already operating, and that a lot of what's being talked about in terms of space weapons as being a theoretical thing are already operational. Now, if that is true, it's only violating a lot of treaties. It's violating U.S. law. And I think that this is the next level of disclosure, is indeed trying to figure out to what extent some of these projects have gotten legs of their own and have escaped the Congress and even the presidency in terms of being controllable. My intelligence sources, very recent ones, in fact, have confirmed to me that we do have those sort of weapon systems and that they have been
deployed. Do you know any details? Any details of the nature of these weapons?
Pulsed laser weapons, plasma weapons, particle beam weapons, and other weapons that have been used. And by the way, I do have it confirmed that we have targeted and destroyed extraterrestrial vehicles on more than one occasion, even though they have shown no hostility towards us. This is a very reckless thing. If there's any chance that what these men are telling me is true, this is the greatest threat to national security and world security in history, not arising from the extraterrestrials, but from the reckless behavior of people who are acting aggressively and overly aggressively towards these objects operating in our airspace and in near-Earth orbit. I would say to the public that, you can only... A man who is in the British Foreign Service, who retired from the British Foreign Service, told me, if you kick a hornet's nest too many times, you shouldn't be too surprised if eventually one comes out and stings you.
That's right.
Okay, so I think there are some things that we have been doing that have not been supervised properly by either the international community or the Congress or the presidency. Now, for example, we have two separate lawyers, current members of the bar, one of the bar in D.C., who were involved in the Carter White House, who are coming forward.
Oh.
Both of these men testified to the fact that Jimmy Carter was not only deceived on the issue, but that projects that were being authorized by the White House were shut down.
Shut down?
By military covert operatives, illegally shut down, I might add, and that the President Carter was, quote, left out of the loop. We have at least four or five different military witnesses. One was with the Defense Intelligence Agency and worked with the Carter White House, who said, oh, no, we wouldn't tell Carter anything.
Mm.
So now, it doesn't matter what you think of a man, whether you voted for him or not, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or hermaphrodite, you don't create insubordination of the chief executive officer of the United States. The reason I get so upset about this, my mother's family fought in the American Revolution, literally were prisoners of war with the British to help establish the United States. And these kinds of abuses of our system are very dangerous and erosive to our long-term freedoms. And I think it's very important that people understand that we really need to begin to rein in some of these covert programs.
Well, Jimmy Carter, as you know, was not considered the military's best friend.
No, but at the same time, he's the president and commander in chief. It doesn't matter what you think of the man.
Yeah, that's right. It's the office.
It's the office you have to respect. It's the rule of law that you must respect.
It would be nice. Dr. Greer, top of the hour.
Yes.
Hold on. I have many more questions for you. Stay right where you are. My guest is Dr. Stephen Greer from CSETI. The big one coming up on the 9th at the in Washington at the National Press Club Ballroom. Press, be there.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired May 4th, 2001.
Certainly is. Good morning. Dr. Stephen M. Greer is my guest. He's going to blow it all wide open on the 9th, 9 a.m., Washington, D.C., National Press Club Ballroom. All the press out there, if you've listened to this and you're not going to be there, what are you doing? I mean, really, what are you doing if you're not going to be there?
May 4th, 2001 on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
All right, we've only got Dr. Greer for one more segment, then we'll be into open lines. A lot for you to comment on in the last 2.5 hours. So I want to get several important questions in what I think of as very important. Dr. Greer, you mentioned the beehive thing a little earlier and poke at it enough times and eventually don't be surprised if you're stung. Are you at all concerned about a swarm near you?
No, I never worry about that. Of course, I've dealt with this now for a number of years at a very high level. In 1993, I briefed a sitting CIA director and moved into that orbit at that time, so that doesn't concern me, quite frankly. I think I'm more concerned that the public try to support what we're doing and that the media try to support what we're doing. These are good, honest people coming forward. I'm not important in all this, quite frankly. I mean, I've kind of masterminded in a sense, but in reality, it's these people who are the insiders who are coming forward, who are extraordinary, courageous heroes, and I've simply facilitated this to happen. And in reality, the public now has the responsibility to contact. And I'm making an appeal right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how do we help?
Well, a number of ways. Number one, that everyone listening should write four people. There are two senators, their personal representative in the House of Representatives in Congress. That's three. Okay, and then the U.S. President Bush. And ask them to, number one, hold open, honest hearings on the subject. This is a case where we are asking for subpoenas so that people can tell the truth.
This is really the entire purpose of what you're doing on the 9th, isn't it, to push us toward congressional hearings, open hearings?
Yes, and we are also drafting, we're going to present draft legislation in the next few weeks where we will, in meetings we're having with members of Congress already, we're discussing legislation to ban weapons from space, that we can't just entertain whether or not weapons in space would redound to the national security of the United States when we have to begin to view space as a frontier that we are sharing with other civilizations. And so we are also asking that people write in support of that, and also that they write in their letter recommending that the technologies, the energy and propulsion technologies related to anti-gravity, to so-called zero-point energy generation, and other technologies related to UFO technologies, be studied and be in the near term released for peaceful energy generation so that we may protect the Earth's environment and also solve the looming energy crisis. So if people would write in their own words, not send an email, they are deleted, but send a fax to your two senators, your member of Congress, and to the president, and also ask them to attend the VIP briefing. I will tell you, I can't give the location, but on May 10th, the day after this May 9th press conference, mm-hmm. we are having a closed VIP briefing in Washington. Anyone listening who is an opinion maker, a military official, a political leader, a leader in the scientific community should contact us, and they will be allowed into this meeting. They will meet privately with these witnesses, and we will give them a full dossier of evidence, witness testimony, and 4 hours of edited testimony from these witnesses. So they should encourage, the people listening should encourage their representatives, their senator, and President Bush to learn about this issue and take it seriously and have these open hearings. So that's one thing that someone, that everyone listening can do, and
right,
it would have a huge effect.
What about the National Press Club ballroom business on the 9th at 9 a.m.? Would you think that listeners would have any effect by getting hold of the press and urging them to attend?
Well, actually, that may be counterproductive. I do think anyone with connections to specific media figures should contact us through our website so that our media firm can facilitate their participation. However, I would say that many people who are in larger cities that may have stringers in the D.C. press corps,
right,
that they should contact their local CBS, ABC, NBC, or major newspapers such as the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, other major papers in Chicago and other cities who I know have bureaus here in Washington, then they should encourage them to come to the press conference and to look into this matter, that this is not a joke. It's very serious, and these are people coming forward and are willing to go on the record with their testimony.
Doctor, as you know, serious investigators in nearby fields of investigation have been ambushed before. Talk show hosts have been ambushed before with regard to disinformation.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if you're at all concerned about that, or you feel that everybody who's coming forward has been sufficiently vetted so that there's no fear of that, or is there always a little fear?
Well, there's always some concern of that. And the analogy I use, I mean, we have done this on a very limited budget. We have not been able to spend $50,000 in investigations on each person, to be sure.
Right.
But I will tell you that I am more than 90%, closer to 99% certain that all of these witnesses are legitimate, sincere people. Is it possible we've been scammed by one or two? Sure. It's just like in the emergency department. I've had people come in writhing in pain, holding their flank, saying they have a kidney stone. They go into the bathroom, prick their finger, and squeeze blood into their urine sample so that they will get a narcotic injection. Now, I have been tricked as an ER doctor. I'm pretty savvy, but it can happen. And most of the time, we catch these sort of frauds. But it is possible that we can be tricked. Look, you know, there's nothing that's 100%, but I have very high confidence that the vast, vast majority of all these witnesses are the real McCoy, and they come across that way to everyone who has seen their briefing testimony. The people who've been looking at this in sort of focus groups are just very impressed with the sincerity and the genuineness of these people. And I have high confidence in the pool of witnesses that we've identified.
All right. Let us say be optimistic and say you're really successful. You get front page news across the country. Congressional hearings are on the way. What would be the consequences socially, do you think, of disclosure? I mean, I'm sure that's something you've considered.
Yes.
In light of what you're doing.
Well, there's an entire on our website, the www.disclosureproject.org website. There's an entire paper about these implications, but to summarize them, we are really wanting to say, look, we're not doing this to try to say, let's get a pound of flesh from people who kept the secret. There have been some good reasons for the secrecy, quite frankly, but it's time to move on. This is 2001, for God's sakes, and the technologies that are involved with these covert classified projects would give us an entirely new sustainable civilization without energy shortages, without pollution, and within 20 to 40 years, no significant poverty in the world. We're talking a whole new world
here, Doctor,
a beautiful world. So what I would say to people is that the implications in the near term and in the long term are really wonderful if we handle it well. And so that is really up to the public to demand.
I'd be very interested to know what the reasons for secrecy were that are no longer reasons.
Oh, well, I think in the very early days, for example, we've had people on the inside testify to this effect. In fact, they didn't know how these objects worked. They didn't want our competitors or our enemies in the form of the Soviet Union or other countries to get them before we did. And they were also in the early days, you can imagine in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, they were concerned about public panic. Well, this is 2001. We've been to space. There have been all kinds of things in the media about the likelihood of intelligent life elsewhere. I don't think that there would be any panic associated with that unless the crazies out there, the really kooks in the paranoid sort of military crowd, try to say there's an alien threat that we need to put weapons in space for. Now, that could be very destabilizing, but there's no evidence for it, and we would need to have very intelligent people stand up and say, look, let's not get ridiculous. I mean, if these life forms were hostile, given the stupid things we have done, we wouldn't have known about it by now. In fact, when I was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, I told the head of the Foreign Technology Division there, which at the time was called FASTIC, Foreign Aerospace Science and Technology Division, that, you know, if these life forms were hostile, they could have fixed this problem in a nanosecond. And the fact that we're still breathing the free air of Earth is abundant testimony to the fact that they are very patient. They may be concerned with our weapons and concerned with the direction our civilization has taken, but I don't believe that they are hostile towards humanity and the Earth per se. I will say that I think they're very concerned about some of these military adventures that have occurred in space, and I think that we really need to disclose this issue because the diplomatic and international community needs to get a handle on that and get control over that.
Are you really certain we've actually shot at these craft, if not having brought one down or several?
I am confident. We have testimony to the effect that we have brought down numerous objects over the years, not every year, but they have been. And, in fact, we have testimony that, indeed, the so-called Roswell crash was not an accidental one, that it was an electromagnetic field generated by very powerful radar systems that caused, apparently deliberately, the downing of those objects because we had had an earlier event happen where we learned that that was possible. Remember, these objects are not using normal propulsion systems. They're using very high-powered electromagnetic physics. And you can electronically cause them to be sort of in an electromagnetic pulse type situation disrupted. So my understanding is that, yes, that has happened, and that if that is true, and this needs to be further investigated, that we need an immediate, what's called a stand-down order from the president to rein in any such activity that we, this NRO officer who is coming forward, the former master sergeant in the Air Force, has said, we simply must stop doing this. It's just reckless, and there's no cause for it. There's no reason for it. I have very high confidence that, indeed, we have done this and that it is a serious national security threat. I cannot overemphasize that the threat to world peace and our own national security from this behavior is severe. It is probably the gravest threat to world peace that we've ever known, although it's not acknowledged officially. And I think that the more we allow these things to get out of control and the more that we move towards openly expanding the weaponization of space and putting weapons in space, the more we're entering into a very dangerous chapter in human history. And as the Chinese proverb says, unless we change directions, we're likely to end up where we are going. So I hope that we can make a course correction and begin a new chapter. I think the future of humanity can be extraordinarily bright, given the information and the technologies we have, if we can find the wisdom to use them for peaceful purposes. Now, that brings up another issue. These technologies, like any I've seen people killed with a butter knife. As an emergency doctor,
sure,
anything can be used as a weapon. And so there are national security concerns, which are valid, concerning these technologies as to how they could be used for weapon systems. And this is why we're going to need to strengthen international review of technologies and how they're used, because until the world really evolves to being a peaceful place, and we're not there yet, these technologies, while they can save the world's environment and give us abundant energy, could be used by madmen for weapon systems. And so, like any other technology, they're going to need to be carefully monitored and to ensure that they are used for exclusively peaceful means.
Mm-hmm. I've got a message here from a C-SPAN cameraman. He says, look, C-SPAN is always looking for interesting programming. He's willing to contact a high executive, he says.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you think they'd be good ones to be down there at the press club covering this?
Yes, they should contact us. We would love to have them there and to broadcast it live, and we'd cooperate with them in any way we can.
All right. Doctor, our planet is being ever so constantly poisoned by our use of fossil fuels, and we are now proceeding with the search for more fossil fuels at a rapid rate while cutting the budget for alternative fuels. And you're telling me that you've got proof that there is technology that would produce abundant, relatively cheap energy.
It'd be free energy. Yeah.
Free energy.
Yeah.
Well, that may be the problem.
It would be free and unmetered, and that is the problem. And this is not something just connected to UFOs. There's actually been classification of advanced systems. I have a Bell Labs scientist who has documented, I think he said, 28 devices that people have invented over the years that have been classified by national security order because they would generate energy without being able to sell the energy or meter it. And what that means, of course, is that you don't need an electric bill. Those of you in California paying huge electric bills, that's all nonsense. But, of course, that's very good news for the long-term situation with the Earth, but I do say that it would be a multi-trillion dollar economic alteration that would occur, and I guess those who have a massive interest in electric power generation, fossil fuels, coal, oil, etc., would not find this to be really a great thing. Unfortunately, we need to learn to say, look, there's been 100 years of a free ride for those industries, and it's time that we put humanity first, that we put the Earth first, that we allow these technologies to be used for peaceful purposes. It is a big change, but I think that, you know, the problem is that people are looking at all this in a fear-minded way.
Mm-hmm.
They need to look at the good side of this. They need to look at a hopeful future for humanity, and we have to be wise and cautious. But at the same time, we have to be hopeful, and it's time for us to have a new vision for what humanity can become. Yes, these technologies are real, and we have witnesses who can be subpoenaed by the Congress who have worked directly on those kinds of technologies. And I'll tell you something else. We have people who have witnessed or worked directly on what are called alien reproduction vehicles, these anti-gravity things that run. They're kick-started by a 24-volt marine battery, and they have interstellar, they can go faster than the speed of light. They tap into the zero-point energy field. They have anti-gravity effect. They can go to space and back. They're being manufactured by Lockheed, Northrop, and others up there near Palmdale and over the years, and they are real.
These are the faster they go, the faster they go type craft?
You bet. The faster they go, the lighter they get. They reach a point of zero mass inertia, and bam. And that's why the fiber optics, by the way, are so important, because you have to have a guidance system that isn't related to electrons It's related to photons, which are massless, as you know. So it's interesting that fiber optics are so key to all this, and of course that was some of the original material that Colonel Corso said that we retrieved from the crash in New Mexico.
Sure.
That is true, by the way. We have that confirmed by other witnesses. But I think that so we have these men that can be subpoenaed. These technologies are real. They would give us an entirely new operating system, quote-unquote, for this planet, away from fossil fuels. Now, people say, oh, well, my God, this would be a big change. Remember, it would take 10 to 20 years to phase it in. If we disclose this in year 2001, in order to make that change and have every home and car running off these new technologies, you're talking conservatively 15 years. And that's about how much time we have left in the environment and in the fossil fuels
mm-hmm.
before we get into rolling blackouts, not just in California, but rolling blackouts all over the planet. So, you know, it's really time to make this change, and it isn't going to be, this energy problem isn't going to be fixed just with windmills and solar panels that can help. But these new advanced
right.
physics are what's really
going to
solve the problem because they
Obviously.
Put out real power.
Doctor, I know you've been working on this for years and years, and you've been talking about it on this program and many other places for years. Why now? Why May 9th at the National Press Club in Washington? What's the timing?
Well, the timing is that we were finally able to find enough supporters and benefactors to go around and interview and process. You know, this has been a massive undertaking.
I
don't know if, I mean, I'm making light of the fact that I've had to almost single-handedly go all over the world and interview these witnesses. We've had to, it's a massive amount of just out-of-pocket expenses. And this, by the way, with no paid staff. So we've just, it's taken us this long to get all this done. And once we got it done, we said, you know, you can't make the perfect the enemy of the good, and we're not perfect. This we would like to have a lot of things that we don't have. We haven't had the level of funding we need. We're doing this on less than 10% of our original estimated budget. I'll tell you that. So it's been a strain. I mean, it's been a huge strain on me and my wife and family. We're going to do it, and we feel that we simply can't wait any longer, the world needs to have the truth.
Doctor, we're out of time, and you're just beginning. I wish you all the luck in the world. We'll have you back, of course, again. Dr. Greer, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
Good morning. Last 2.5 hours should have given you plenty to talk about. It's Friday night, Saturday morning, and we're going into open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. So, get ready for the unknown. All I would ask is, the instant, you know how I do my work here? We don't screen calls. I've got nobody else here. I've just got ringing phone lines. So the instant I come to your line, have your radio nearby so you can reach over and turn it off. The one thing you don't want to do is have your radio on when you're on the air. So if you're planning on calling, get your radio nearby, have your hand ready, and when you hear me say you're on the air, turn that radio off. That in mind, we head into the unknown shortly.
May 4th, 2001, on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
I've got something kind of interesting here, which I'm going to have to kludge together to play for you, but somebody sent it to me, and I thought it was kind of unique. As you know, the Roswell crash occurred in July of 1947, and there were newspaper headlines that I'm sure many of you have seen, but there was also a radio report of the Roswell crash. Now, all I'm going to be able to do is get... Somebody sent me a WAVE file of the headline as it was read over the radio in 1947, if you can imagine that. It's very short, and I'm going to have to just lean into my computer speaker and hit play and see if you're going to be able to hear this. In fact, let me just take my headphones off and do that. Here we go.
Headline edition, July 8th, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile, found sometime last week, has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection.
Thought you might be interested in hearing that. Kind of interesting, huh? Can you imagine how that headline, brief as it was greeted by the world? Fascinating, huh? That's a sound clip. We'll try and get up on the web as soon as my webmaster resurfaces. He's, I think, on his way back to Arizona now. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Rich, calling from New Jersey.
Hello, Rich.
I just recently moved here from California.
Yes.
A couple years ago, this is something that's been going... I'm going to explain something that's going on right now. A couple years ago, I was attending a friend's birthday party, and his sister was there. They live with their parents, not my friend, but the parents, in the hills about 30 miles northwest of Hollister, where there's no electricity, just rolling hills, lots of cattle.
Oh, I know Hollister.
My sister said that they had seen and were seeing maybe 10 miles in the distance from where they live on the top of a hill. They have no electricity, thus they can't be seen. Some white light that was shooting straight up into the sky, coming from several different directions, and that she didn't want to go there anymore. At her parents' house, and I really didn't believe this. A couple months later, I met her father and her mother, which they both confirmed it.
Yes.
And they said they sit outside with lawn chairs and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this last, I thought maybe it was military operations, but this last New Year's night, we were out there dirt bike riding on their land, and sure enough, I observed it, and I asked him, this goes on constantly? And he says it goes on 2-3 times a week. And it was definitely nothing like I've ever seen. And you'd think New Year's night, probably not conducting operations or anything. And there's no towns, no roads, nothing out there. And this goes on, every other day, week after week.
There are a number of spots like that one, sir. All I can say is you are one of millions and millions of Americans. Millions of Americans. I mean, a high percentage of Americans who have seen these objects. So, what Stephen Greer is going to do on May 9th is very important. And I don't know how you appeal to the nation's press corps. And I know I'm being heard now in Washington, D.C. Very well heard, thank you, in Washington, D.C. And so, I know that a lot of the regular press corps does listen to my program. And I would appeal to you that this is very, very serious stuff. This is a potential, a gigantic story. One of the biggest stories ever written. And these people are coming forward, not cloaked high officials of our government and military. And they're going to give their names, and they're going to tell the truth, their stories. Many of them, some of them at least, doing this as sort of a last effort. They just simply don't want this gigantic secret held from the American public anymore. So I really think it would be worthwhile and behoove the editor of any large newsroom to dispatch one of your reporters to this event on May 9th. Maybe, just maybe, we can turn the corner. But we're going to have to get some fair reporting for that to occur. Now, maybe that is too much to ask. I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Bell. This is Ron calling from Jacksonville, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
Well, I just wanted to say on tonight's show, you know, Dr. Greer, I wish him all the luck in the world, and May the 9th is going to be a very important day.
Yes, it is.
And do you remember President Reagan, and I think he may have been addressing the United Nations, if memory serves me correct, but remember when he made the comment about if we all faced a threat,
yep.
And he was inferring from outer space,
yes.
that we'd have to drop all our petty differences aside here on the Earth and,
yes.
and possibly go, you know, against a threat from space.
I recall it vividly.
A lot of people, of course, being here from Illinois, and President Reagan was originally from here, a lot of people liked President Reagan just for that fact, of course, from Illinois. But a lot of people always felt that he really did know something and that he really wanted to come clean to the country, but just couldn't. Or if he did, well, he would have really blown things away at the time. And
I know that Carter made inquiries, and I believe Dr. Greer when he said that he believes the information was withheld from President Carter.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with you that President Reagan, who I really loved, I mm-hmm. thought he was a great president. President Reagan probably had the information,
mm-hmm.
but he was a great patriot from the old school,
mm-hmm.
and I think that he probably, if he was told, for the good of the nation, he had to hold on to it, he would have very reluctantly.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, I appreciate your call.
I really do, and keep up the good work. I love listening to you.
Take care. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Is this me?
Yes, only you know that for certain, but it
okay,
sounds...
Okay, good, thanks.
Sounds,
I got the feedback. B.O.B., KSCO, 1080.
Yes.
Post.
Yes.
West Post. I want to offer this thought. Art to heart, H-E-R. H-E-A-R-T. Art
good, good.
To heart, to heart, to heart, to coast, to coast, to coast.
Yes, yeah. Just offer it away, sir.
It's called Wordsmith, B-O-B. In other words, put these words in your heart that you are reaching all hearts everywhere on this earth. This is art to heart, to heart, to heart. And you're reaching me. Thank you.
You're very...
Article, indefinite article, indefinite, and definite article, the and a article... You do that, art tickles.
All right, sir, that's about enough, but it was artful. Thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Doug from Toledo.
Hi, Doug.
WSBD 1370.
Thank you.
Okay. I just want to thank you for two incredible shows you've had last night and tonight.
Yes, the response to the program last night was astounding.
I can imagine that.
Absolutely astounding. I meant to mention that to the audience. I had so many other things I had to get out. But the email response and the mostly email, it was just overwhelming. And, you know, at the time the story was being told, I was watching these people comment on the computer. And they were wild and woolly and angry and saying, oh, what a bunch of baloney and everything. But that is not the way the general public absorbed that at all. They bought it all the way.
I believe that. I had a similar experience, not as far-reaching as his, but 20 years ago, that same type of an experience saved my life. So it touched home. And I'm sure it did with a lot of other people.
Apparently.
And tonight, you know, the Stephen Greer show, that also touched me personally, too, because about 4 years ago, that's the reason I got on the Internet, was to find information, confirmation and information about what I had seen.
That's it. Once you've seen it, you know,
right.
and the rest is only when will everybody else find out?
That's right. I saw a black disc at about 2,000 feet over my head, standing perfectly still, making no noise, and it was the same night as the Holland, Michigan UFO sightings.
Yes, I've run the tape on the Holland, Michigan sightings a number of times. It's incredibly dramatic.
Yeah. Yes, sir. And I just wanted to say that, and I want to thank you for putting that on. And it was very interesting, and I'm sure it's going to be more interesting as they go on.
I would suspect so, sir.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello? Hello? Going once. Oh, no, east of the Rockies, my fault, sorry. Are you there?
That was still me, yeah.
Oh, that's still you. All right. West of the Rockies now, you're on the air, I think.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Tony from Albuquerque.
Hi, Tony.
770 KLB.
Yes, sir.
I enjoy your show thoroughly. I've been listening for about 7 years now.
Thank
you. I'm calling you from work, as a matter of fact. I'm an ambulance dispatcher.
Oh, you are?
Yes. It's a fun job.
Tough job.
Yeah, it gets kind of hectic in here. It's better than body driving, I'll tell you that right now.
I'm sure it is.
Dead bodies and stuff for a while. But anyway, I got a topic, an idea for you. How about opening up a serial killer line? How about something like that, you know?
A serial killer line?
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject. I've been reading a book called The Search for the Green River Killer.
But I know, but you mean to open a line for serial killers?
Exactly. I want to know what's going on in their mind. Why do they do this? Why do they kill certain types of people? Why do they dump people in certain places, in rivers and woods? And just to get into the mind of these killers and try to understand what goes on.
If I were to open a serial killer line, I can assure you I would get serial killers, or at least people who claimed they were serial killers.
Exactly.
Wait. And then I would get in trouble.
Why?
Well, because there would be phone traces and taps. There would be subpoenas. There would be, I tell you, it would be a mess.
You think so?
Well, no, yeah. I know so.
No, I don't think, because, you know, if you're a time traveler,
National
you're a
host
black.
Opens show for serial killers.
Yeah.
Serial killers flood in to tell their stories. There's a great headline.
Well, there's about at least 50, between 50 and 100 in the United States alone right now.
I'm sure there are.
And I just would like to hear what they think, you know? I mean, it's just such a taboo, you know, subject and all.
I like to kill again and again. I like to see the faces of my victims as they drift into the blackness.
Exactly. I don't think it's that eerie, but I just think it's more psychotic.
Actually, it is that eerie.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's a fascinating subject, I think. And I think it'd be interesting to hear one of them speak their mind.
Well, I'm going to do a show on the other brother, the Sante... you know, the big story about the grifters, Sante and Kenny Kimes.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to do a show with the other brother.
Uh-huh.
And that'll come pretty close. Not serial killers, perhaps, but
yeah.
Absolutely devoted in every respect to crime.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing that, I think, on the 15th. I'm not sure of the day. I think it's the 15th.
Cool.
Somewhere in there. All right?
Sounds good.
All right. Take care. And I will take your serial killer line under consideration, but I'm not even sure I could stand to listen to that. By the way, we're going to have Paul Smith here, the remote viewer. Possibly Russell Targ. We'll find out about that. He's sort of a possible at this point on the 16th. That one's not listed yet. And so I've done some other bookings that are not yet up on the website. Anyway, lots of interesting, it's going to be a very, very controversial week next week. We're going to make a lot of people angry. But what else is new? And that will begin with a bang on Monday with Patch Adams, the real Patch Adams. So it's going to be a pretty wild week, and Patch Adams is a pretty wild man. But I hold this forum open for wild things out on the edge. Believe me, Patch Adams is out on the edge, all right. First time caller line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Mark from Sandia Park, New Mexico.
Hello, Mark.
How are you today?
Fine.
Okay. Show's been great so far.
Thank you.
I have a comment on at the actual if an E.T. was to walk into your studio right now.
Yes.
What do you think your reaction would be?
Heart attack.
Right. And that's my biggest problem with all the intellectuals say, okay, they're real and we need to contact them. But I think the majority of people would just freak. I mean, the human being...
Yes, but you gave me a rather extreme example. I mean, an E.T. walking into my studio, that would be a real problem for my whole system, and especially my heart, I'm sure. But there would be lesser ways that the reality could be, you know, inculcated to me without giving me a heart attack. It could be a lesser way, and Stephen Greer's way, I think, is something of a lesser way. If the press will pay attention, he's got hard evidence. It's about time they listened, and it's about time disclosure began for real. That's what he's going to do.
I completely agree with that. I really do. I just think that the majority of human beings still aren't ready.
Yeah, I do agree with you. The social consequences may be more than Dr. Greer imagines, and I sort of imagine they would be, too. I know a lot of people who would be extremely threatened, very angry, and looking for somebody to shoot if they really thought there were aliens.
Right. Right, yeah, just how humans interrelate with each other when someone is different.
Yes.
Just goes to show, because of the tribal instincts we all have.
Yeah, imagine 3 or 4 feet high, no particular human characteristics, slanty eyes, and maybe green in color. That ought to do it right there.
Right, right. But anyway, great show, and keep up the good work. And hopefully, I'm right up the road here from Dr. Richard Hogan. I'd like to meet him sometime.
You're a neighbor, huh?
Well, probably less than 5 miles away, but I have no idea exactly where he is.
It's not Dr. Richard, just Richard Hoagland. So
Hoagland.
If you're really a neighbor, one day... Richard, are you home?
Hopefully I can find him. I'd like to help him on Project Enterprise.
All right.
Happy volunteer for that.
Thank you very much for the call, and take care. Actually, you should always try and contact somebody who is a public person in ways other than, you should first send an email or, let the person know you're a neighbor or something like that. I don't know. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm doing.
I'm... KHVH, Honolulu, Hawaii.
Yes, sir.
And I'd like to shout out to your channels on EFNet.
FNet people, yes.
Oh, yeah. And I was wondering if you had a replacement for Peter Davenport yet.
Yes, that's in progress. You'll be hearing about that soon.
Because I wanted to volunteer for that, but...
Okay, would you turn whatever it is you've got on off, please?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that.
You don't need that. All you need to do is hear me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In answer to your first question, yes, soon. We're working very hard on that. I wish we didn't have to, but so be it. So obviously we want somebody who is available. There's going to be quite a bit involved. And Peter Davenport worked extremely hard on what he did. And so make no mistake about it. The person who does this can't lightly consider doing it. It requires a lot of things. It requires a website. It requires a telephone. It requires attention for many hours per day. It requires a lot of things. I don't put that down at all. What he had to do was very serious indeed. And so you sort of can't lightly volunteer. You're talking about your life here.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, I think I could do it, sir. But if you have somebody better than me...
I don't know all that much about you. You're welcome to email me and provide me with information about yourself, but I'm just saying a lot of resources, a lot of time would be required. When whoever it is, certainly, if they're doing a good job, we'll get them donations, enough to keep them going, do the very best we can, as we did for Peter Davenport, and... Try and keep them with enough money to keep the office going, as it were. So you email me, you let me know if you're the one. I'd be glad to talk to you. I'm Art Bell. This is C2C AM.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
Holding you is a warmth that I thought I could never find. Just trying to decide.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
Good morning, everybody. How you doing? I'm Art Bell. This is kind of an interesting email from Tammy in Texas, and I thought I would inquire. It says, "Hi, Art. Was wondering if you'd heard anything about the black mold thing going on in Texas. Answer is, no, Tammy, I haven't." She goes on, "In case you have not, be made aware, there is. It's going on in Dallas and North Texas, and in this area, people have been finding a strange mold in buildings. Black, both new and old structures. Evidently, there's some sort of health concern associated with it all, because the news reports that I've heard are talking about entire schools and apartment buildings and courthouses and homes being evacuated until the stuff can be cleaned up. In some cases, the buildings have had to be torn down. No, and I want to hear about it. So if anybody out there has any more information on the Texas black goo, we'll call it, mold, actually, I want to hear about it." No, I had no idea. Well, I've done it again and missed a break, so you'll all get treated to an extra commercial or two. Here we go.
...4th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Once again, into the night and the unknown of unscreened calls. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Yeah, David, Phoenix, KFYI.
Yes, sir.
Good show tonight.
Thank you.
Hey, in honor of Dr. Greer, maybe this is a great night for you to give us support of a Brookings report. I keep thinking about that. You talk on it often.
Yes. Well, that's, you know why?
I've got a lot of real
because
work.
I think that it is as true today as it was then. I know that a lot of people have argument with that, but I'm not one of them.
I know where you're coming from, and I've thought about it a lot also. But all my super right-wing Nazi Christian friends, they've already moved around it. They've already sandbagged it that these are the evil ones. So it won't be a problem for religious communities to move around it. They've always moved around everything else.
Well, yeah, but how do you think the people you just talked about would react if they actually saw, let's say, a 3 or 4 foot alien where they could get to him? You know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. A lot of these people, sir, as the alien came down the ramp, like one of the old sci-fi movies.
They'd ever stood still.
Oh, the little guy'd be full of so much lead, he'd die of lead poisoning before he hit the ramp, bottom of the ramp.
That's true. That will be the reaction of a lot of people.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what we need to take us on beyond our thought constraints that seem to have reached our maximum ability to deal with things, and John Mack that was on the other night, and
yes.
I've got his book too, and
mm-hmm.
he and some of the other New Agers under a little different term. You know, these are warm fuzzies, these things, and we're going to go through this transition, and the people that are already getting abducted. It's
Dr. Greer pointed out something pretty interesting though, and that was that. I'm not saying they're warm and fuzzy, but if they were antagonistic, as in not wanting us here, you would think that with their level of technology, they'd have sterilized us long ago.
Absolutely, but the motivation is the issue. I'm not sure they just don't want to mess up the ranch, you know, mess up the stock and the farm there.
I see. That would be us.
That would be us. You know, I mean, if you look at the hard evidence, you know, these people being abducted, for example, they don't have a lot of warm, friendly stories. What positives have we seen come out of it so far? Except maybe they did stop the Cold War. I've often wondered that, particularly when you're talking about the missile.
On the other hand, the missiles are still there. And here. And there.
Yeah.
Thinking of China now and other places. I appreciate your call. I don't know. I thought Dr. Greer probably had a point. That there may have been a sort of instruction to governments that, look here, you're not going to have a nuclear war. We're not going to allow that to occur. Now, of course, I wouldn't want to test the theory, but it's comforting to imagine such a thing, isn't it? Again, you don't want to test that kind of thing. You don't want to test it. All right, west of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
How are you doing, Art?
Doing okay, sir.
Yeah, back when I got out of the military in 75, I went to work for a company. I was going to go to work for a company called EG&G.
Oh, yes. We know them well here.
Yeah, okay. Well, my friend, he went to work for them. And he used to get on a plane every Monday and go up north towards Area 51,
come back every
Friday. And,
right.
And he couldn't tell me anything. And I knew the guy all my life. And he finally, after about 3 or 4 years, told me what they do. It's the same thing as they're doing over there in China. They just take the equipment apart, look at it, see what they can, how it works and operates. And then when they figure it out, then they do whatever they do with it.
Well, if, in fact, we have such equipment, as you put it, or a crash retrieval or wherever we obtained it, that is exactly where they would do it, at Area 51. And, of course, that's the area that does not exist, right? Only here in Pahrump, Nevada, we are a bedroom community for those who work at Area 51. And humorously, I must tell you that at just up the street from me at the VFW, every morning at about 5:30, at least I haven't seen it lately, but I haven't looked lately. Every day I would see it, you know, get off the show, go have a breakfast with my wife, and go past the VFW. And there would be buses, several buses, in the VFW parking lot. It's a small VFW here in Pahrump. And on the side of the buses, it said Area 51. Area 51. That's exactly what it said. Area 51. And, you know, people would pile on the buses and go to Area 51, the place that doesn't exist. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm listening from New York, and Dr. Stephen Greer, his conference is May 9th, 2001, at 9 o'clock in the morning.
At the Washington National Press Club Ballroom, yes.
And did he say that you can pick this up on a computer?
Yes, he said they're going to be making available live streaming video and audio, so you can literally sit in front of your computer and watch it live. And I'm sure that will be a link on his website, and we'll have it up too.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And his it's www.disclosureproject. Is it /org or .org?
Oh, let me go to my. Well, no, I've got a website for this kind of stuff, so.
Uh huh.
Let me get there very quickly, and I've got a T1 here, so I can get on fairly quickly, and see if I can tell you exactly what it is. That is, if my browser will load. Here we go. All right, let's see. Program, tonight's guest info, Dr. Greer, and there's all kinds of links up there. It would be www.disclosureproject.org, O-R-G.
.org.
That's very important, yes. We've got a link on our website, so.
Oh, great. I'd also like to say that you once said, keep thinking on one of your programs, and I think that would be a great tagline for you because we all do keep thinking and we keep watching, listening to the program for that. One reason why I think that NASA does not want anybody to go up there who is not a member of the military. A couple of years ago, I think it was a few years ago, I was kind of half asleep. Unfortunately, I'm sure lots of other people, you know, they want to stay up, but sometimes they won't. And when I did wake up, I heard this woman saying to one of your guests that she had dreams about a lot of people having agony, and the guest said, oh, yes, there are slaves on the moon abducted by our own government. And where do you think that all these people that are missing go? Now, I know some of them go to other places, but this may be a reason.
Do you have any idea how expensive it would be to slave trade to the moon?
Yeah, I know. It was totally new to me, and I was aghast that our government should actually do this.
I can only imagine these poor little slaves, oxygen-deprived, hopping along the moon, carrying rocks, making big rocks into little ones, doing God knows what. I appreciate your call, ma'am, but I wouldn't put that high on my worry list only because of the cost to get these slaves up there. Now, if you're a Sitchin follower, you might recall that we all are descended from slaves. Sons and daughters, oh, gold miners, right? That's Sitchin. And as I've said, when Sitchin is on, it's not so wild. Not when you consider your own reaction to gold. Have you ever had an opportunity to hold gold, solid 24-karat gold of any kind in your hand? There's a sort of thing about it. Something special about gold. People have killed each other for gold for all the time that we've been collecting gold and mining gold, thinking about gold. And there's a madness involved with gold that goes beyond just money. There's something more about gold that you can't quite dismiss fully. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Me?
You.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Number one, I hope you and your family are well. I can't get you all the time. You're not on FM like you used to be. And the
Where,
other night,
wait a minute. Hold on. Where are you?
I'm sorry. This is Dee in Vegas.
In Vegas. No, we're on AM, dear. 720 on the dial. KDWN.
Yeah, I know. AM.
Right.
Well, I can't get it all the time.
Why not?
That's what I'd like to know. I've called a couple different stations. Like, I listen to another, you know, music station, and they're like, what, 5 miles from me, and I can't get them.
Well,
all the time.
But KDWN, hon, is a 50,000-watt station. If you can't get KDWN in Las Vegas, you need a new radio.
Well, I listen to more radio than I watch TV.
I understand.
And I've got like 5 or 6 of them, okay? And the newest one is a Panasonic. And I've tried, and it just doesn't come through. There is some, I don't know if I'm in kind of a vortex where I live.
You must be in a vortex, because you could almost get it on a tooth filling anywhere.
Well, the other night, I couldn't get you. I could barely, all of a sudden, there you were, and I didn't even know when you came back. I'd been surfing both AM and FM. And
I see. And so you just found us.
No. I've had you a while.
All right. Well, I don't have the answer. I'm sorry. I wish I could help you out. KDWN 720 is 50,000 watts in Las Vegas, and there's almost no way not to hear it there. It is always possible that you could be in some really, really weird area where there's a mix that occurs with some other station just right there at in your block, literally, you know, that close. But otherwise, it's unimaginable that you couldn't hear KDWN. I mean, you can hear them in up and down the coast of California in about 12 or 13 other states, much less right there in Las Vegas. Hard to miss. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
I salute you. You're the man.
Thank you.
I'm calling from Northern California. My name is Mike.
Yes, Mike.
And the main reason I called is because one of the close encounters that I've experienced, I witnessed F-4 Phantom jets shoot at a UFO. I was in Arizona by a lake called Martinez Lake.
Yes, sir.
And I used to like to lay out at night and look at the stars. And what caught my attention was a flash of light past the clouds.
Right.
Well, when I looked in the direction of the flash of light, I saw a smaller light, like an airplane or something. And it was moving away from the flash of light. Then, in my peripheral vision, I saw the jets. And they were streaking towards this thing. Well, it had moved from what appeared to be an explosion in the sky, sort of down and towards me. And then, instantaneously, this thing changed directions and accelerated so fast that the synopsis in my eyes made it look like it was blinking, and whew, gone.
Yep. And then you're absolutely certain that you saw something fired, a missile or what?
What I saw was the flash from the explosion. It was a near hit.
Oh, I see.
Tell.
Well, a lot of missiles are programmed to, when they get to the closest point to their target, if they're not going to hit it, to detonate.
Apparently that's what happened, but I'm sure of what I saw because nothing that mankind has created can accelerate at the rate that this thing moved and change directions.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way, sir. The only thing I would say is if such craft are out there, and I don't for one second doubt you because I've seen one myself, and if we're shooting at them, or worse yet, hitting them, or in some cases actually destroying them, we're taking a terrible chance, or our military is, it seems to me, taking a terrible chance on our behalf. While they might think they're protecting us, it just seems to me somebody with a kind of level of technology that could achieve the sort of non-aerodynamic flight that you just described would get very angry at being shot at. And probably you wouldn't want to be on the receiving side of their anger. And it's possible that we could be on the receiving side of their anger. So I'm with Dr. Greer. Shooting at them is not a good idea. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. How are you this morning?
I'm just spiffy.
I'm listening to you on WTAM. It's Joe, and our Boston station is just like NASA.
Yes, indeed, Joe.
I have a question about NASA. I've been hearing you. I know. I enjoy Dr. Greer, by the way.
Yes.
He was great. Can you get those tapes of that interview? Because NASA cannot deny access to the station. Is there any way you can play the interviews? Because, like, you know, Area 51, how you used to talk about
what,
that.
Well, I'm not sure what interview you're talking
Tito,
about.
Tito.
What interview with Tito?
They're having interviews with him over the Russian station, and that's what BBC said.
Yes, I'm very well aware of that. But through the Russian station only, not through... my complaint is that we're not able to do it through NASA.
No, but, I mean, can you get on with your satellite dish and hear the interviews and play them for the people?
No, Joe. There's such thing as copyright. And when an organization, for example, CNN, just as an example, gets an interview with Mr. Tito, that is a copyrighted property of CNN. You can always seek to get permission, but that's quite an affair. It's not so easily done. And... frequently, organizations don't like to give that sort of thing away because they've not obtained it easily. And I understand that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. I've been trying to get you since you had the guy on from 911 with his phone calls.
Oh, yes.
And I'm calling you from Honolulu.
Yes, ma'am.
And I wanted to tell you a funny story about things that tourists do. We were on a bus one day, and the tourist said, well, after I leave here, I'm going to go to Oahu. So I said, what do you mean? She says, well, I've been to the Big Island, I've been to Maui, and now I'm going to go to Oahu. I said, and she says, I've been to Kauai. So I says, what do you think you are now? She said, I'm on the island of Honolulu.
Oh, well.
And then I had another one. Everybody's standing on the bus. It's real crowded. And the bus driver goes past the guy's stop, and he goes, hey, how come you didn't stop? I'm standing up. And the guy says, you have to ring the bell. He goes, you have to ring the bell?
Yes, dear. Well, I guess there's humor even in the tourist industry, huh?
Yeah, I'm thinking about writing a book.
Are you?
About it. Yep. Because I run into all kinds of crazy people every
are you,
day.
Are you one of those ladies who stands at the front of a tourist bus and has a microphone and tells everybody what they're seeing?
No.
What do you do?
What, you mean in general?
No, I mean specifically. You're in the tourist industry?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're not.
I just happen to ride the bus a lot.
Oh, I
and
see.
And I run into all these crazy people with all these different things that they do.
I run into some of them, too.
I think this whole world is getting crazy.
Oh, it is.
But I just had to tell you about that. I've been trying to get through for a long time to tell you those stories.
I see. Well, you've made it, and you've done it, and I thank you. the island of Honolulu. Shows what a lot of Americans know about that state, huh? But some of you don't get out much. I'm Art Bell. Good morning.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
You go strolling through the crowd like Victor Laura contemplating a crime. She comes out of the sun in a silk dress, running like a watercolor in the rain. Don't bother asking for an explanation, she'll just tell you that she came in the air of the cat.
Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 4th, 2001.
Top of the morning to you. The weekend's just about here for me. I suspect many of you as well. Probably for most of you, it's already arrived. Except in some time zones where, I don't know, you may still be at work on Friday. I'm losing track of all this. Anyway, we have, a bit of an extended trek into commercial land because I had this call from Shanghai and mainland China, and it so blew me away that I missed a break. So here we go.
Now we take you back to the night of May 4th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, here we go again. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Couple of points. The lady who was not being able to pick up the radio station.
Yes.
I have a similar problem with Pure with a radio station, KFNN. They at dark, they change their direction of the radio antenna down here, and you can hear it better in Mexico City than you can hear it 8 blocks north of the radio station.
Where are you?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix.
Yeah, I'm listening on KFYI. In fact, KFYI used to have that problem when they were up on 910 before they changed frequencies.
Well, then if you're in Phoenix, you should be able to hear us on the new frequency quite well.
At 550, yeah. They blast now. They peel your paint now.
All right. Glad to hear it. She really should not have had a problem. I mean, KWN, believe me, has a pattern over Las Vegas that would, cook eggs on a sidewalk, so...
Yeah, they may have. Maybe she's too close. Is it a possibility that she's inside the window?
Yeah, there can be a really few weird situations where you get a mix occasionally if you're really close to the towers, or there are weird oddities, but it's pretty rare.
Okay, a couple other quick points. Hunters went to green bullets a long time ago when they were finding lead in the birds' stomachs. Everyone went to steel so that it wouldn't give them lead poisoning.
So it's a good thing the military goes to it then.
Yeah.
So that if you're shot by a green bullet, you have contributed in some way to the environment as you go.
Well, the main thing is the wildlife doesn't pick it up and eat it. Yeah. Another thing is the black mold causes respiratory infections. And it's been around down in Houston forever.
Yes.
And back on the lady who was talking about strangest things and funny people, I was with the DPS up in Alaska, and we used to get the strangest phone calls from people. One lady called up and asked whether or not the 4th of July, the banks would be open since it's a holiday down in America. She wasn't sure. Another one wanted to know what the exchange rate was for American money.
You mean Alaskan money and American money?
Right. Somebody else wanted to know if we had real houses or if they had to live in igloos.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing some of the things they ask.
I used to register
their American passport.
Yeah, I used to live in Anchorage for 3 years, and so I know about all this.
I was out near Dillingham, 308 miles the nearest road, and they come in on their hunting and fishing trips, and they're just completely lost. It's a whole other country. They think they're flying to Russia.
Wait, one more point.
Yes. There used to be a battery on the market. I wonder if anyone else remembers it. It used to have a solar cell wrapped around the outside of the battery. And when the battery went dead, you just threw them in the windowsill for a couple hours and threw them back in whatever you're using. Except they got bought out, and I haven't seen them anymore.
I never saw one of those.
Yeah, almost a decade ago.
You would think, though, that it would be somewhat inefficient in the sense that only a small portion of the solar cells covering a round battery would be exposed to the sun.
You just leave them in the sun for an hour or a couple more hours.
I understand, sir. Thank you very much. I'm just saying it would be interesting but an inefficient design in that the battery, being round, I presume it was, would only have a very small a percentage of it pointed at the sun at any given time, whereas a flat... now they have some pretty interesting solar panels that will charge... nickel metal hydride batteries, very efficient batteries, for example. And these solar panels will just fold up, kind of like a blanket, almost like a blanket. They're really, really interesting. Yeah, I'm beginning to get a lot of information on the goo in Texas. I'm calling it goo. It's not really. It's mold. From Kevin in Texas City, Texas. Art, we are having homes completely gutted and rebuilt due to mold. Hygienists have also found a black carbon growth that isn't a health problem. Let me know if you want more info. Sure, I do. I had not heard about this until now. Black mold. I'll try and call it mold. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening.
Yes, good evening to you, sir.
Just wondering, Art. What I was really ringing to suggest was a couple of guests for your show.
Who would you like to hear?
Well, there's a gentleman who's written a book called Surfing Through Hyperspace. It's Clifford A. Pickover. It's a rather interesting read. He teaches you to think in four dimensions.
Would you email me?
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay, give me as much as you can give me to help contact this person.
Yeah, not a problem. The other thing I was suggesting, what personally I would really like to hear, is it'd have to be a taped interview, but from Stephen Hawking. Some of his concepts on black holes, the ability to time travel and things along those lines, I think would really fit in well.
I would love to do that. As you might imagine, I would love to. There are certain problems, as you can imagine, with Stephen Hawking and doing interviews and so forth, but... I would love to do that in whatever form it could be managed, if you follow me. First time caller line, you're on the air. Cheerio.
Hi, Art. This is Amy up in Bellingham.
Hi, Amy.
How you doing?
Fine.
Listen, kind of a change of subject here. Have you heard the new vaccination announcements that are coming out on the radio lately?
And what are we vaccinating against now?
Well... my local public health department wants everybody to come in and get flu shots, hepatitis B shots, measles shots, and all of these vaccinations. And it's kind of weird to me. And the way they're pushing it is they're saying if you're around a pregnant person or if you work with children.
Yes.
And it's just they're really, really pushing vaccinations. And I just think it's bizarre that they're doing this.
Well, I was really disappointed in my last flu shot.
You too, huh? Did you get
the
really sick?
The only thing that my wife and I got from our flu shot was the stinking flu.
Oh, me too.
And you know, I was going to be so good. I know. We went to the Super Bowl in Florida, and we knew we would have to fly. So, sufficiently ahead of time, we went down and did what we had never done before. We talked about it. Come on, let's give it a try. This way, maybe we won't get the flu. So we flew to Florida, went to the Super Bowl, flew back. The prescribed amount of days went by, and we both came down with the flu. Very, very disappointing.
Well, I don't know what's going on with it up here. My personal theory is that they're trying to tag all the adults because they're really pushing adults to get shots. I don't know if they want to track us with satellites or I don't know what all. But
well, do you know there is a proposal now to take a DNA sample from every child born in Australia, no matter where they're born, and then as soon as that program is complete, to begin on the adult population. So there is a genetic record on file with the government of everybody's genetics. That's the ultimate tagging.
That makes me really, really nervous. They've started tagging pets up here.
Right. And here.
And which
is okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't think you really need to go tagging a whole bunch of pets. But, you know, when they start talking about tagging humans and giving us shots, the last time I got a flu shot, actually, everybody I know up here in Bellingham that got flu shots, we were all down for at least 3 weeks. With the flu.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it just kicked us.
Yes. Well, I will not do it again. I mean, everybody's welcome. You know, they always say the young, the old, the compromised immune system should go and get shot. And I would never say don't, but I won't do it.
Oh, me either. It was awful. I'd rather hang garlic across all the doorways.
And you might have more luck. Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, it was very disappointing. Now, I know they say, well, you can't protect against all the flus. Well, it's my understanding, and then some people will tell you, well, you know, when you got that shot, you were only protected against last year's flu, not this year's flu. Well, foolish me. I always thought that that they went to Hong Kong or wherever the flu develops to know what's coming this year and then would develop a shot in defense of what they knew was coming. Maybe that is not the way it works. International Line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. Going once. Going twice. Speak now. Oh, gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
I had a point and a comment. One was that about the mold. I was curious to find out that in Texas that they're having a problem here in Chicago. I'm listening to you on WLS.
Yes, sir.
And they had two schools that actually closed down. One in, I think it was Gary, Indiana, and then western suburb of Chicago, where they split up the students, sent them to other schools, and closed it down. And, of course, they had all kinds of illnesses that come out of it. So it must be a spreading problem, if you will.
Apparently so, but somehow or another, I'd not heard of a big mold problem that was causing homes to be torn down and all sorts of horrible things. In Texas, you would think that news would have made it around and I would have heard about it, but tonight's first time.
Yeah, well, it surprised me, too. You know, in Chicago here, they had a it was on the radio, and there was a big piece in the paper, and it was on the news, and went on for a while, and then they finally just closed the schools down. Of course, it being close to...
it's amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty amazing, too. I had a question.
Sure.
Could you give out your fax line?
I tell you what, I would prefer not to, only because there are so many new ways to communicate now. If I give out my fax number, I am going to be plagued with a tree-falling quantity of faxes.
I see.
Literally, it takes so much paper to keep up with it, and people have this habit. I used to have a three-page rule, and people would fax a gazillion pages. I mean, nobody followed the rule, and it became unpractical. So we're in the computer age. Send me an email.
Okay.
All right? Thank you. It's ArtBell at mindspring.com. Or artbell@aol.com. And I would like to add, you need not send to both locations. A lot of people do that, thinking then I'll be sure to see it. Some people even go so far as to send 10 emails. Like, I'll see it better if there's 10. No. You can send an email to me, and if one of the email boxes is full, and that does happen, you may try the other. That's why there are two, ArtBell at AOL.com and ArtBell at Mindspring.com. Once again, with respect to this black mold in Texas, I have no way of knowing the credibility of this story, other than the people that have just fast-blasted me and here in Open Lines told me about it. But it sounds like a significant story, and again, the only place you're going to hear about this kind of thing is in an open forum like this, really open. There are certain dangers in running a very open forum, and one of them is you can get stories wrong. You might get something wrong, or somebody might call up and tell you something that's a BS. But to me, that's what talk radio is all about. There are certain wannabes who do the same sort of show that I do and fancy themselves as journalists. Well, make no mistake about it. They're full of it. They're not journalists any more than I'm Tito going around the earth right now. They're not journalists. They're talk show hosts like I am. And they ought not get their identity confused. They're talk show hosts. And if they had any guts at all, they'd do Open Lines, but they don't. They've got to have it all screened and purified before it goes on the air. Well, the only way you get to hear about some things is when it's all really open. This program really is open. All its risks. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey, Art.
Hey, yes.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing.
Oh, good. Well, listen, I have a couple things. First,
sure.
I thought that your guest last night was wonderful. I'm a hospice nurse in California and have been for about 12 years, and I've heard a lot of people's experiences, and that really, really, you know, kind of, something in my heart just, it rang true to me. And the main thing, all your people that are writing you all mad about it, something they forget is that he didn't stay there.
Oh, I understand why they're
angry. I
understand exactly why they're angry, and why that was the sort of thing coming in during the program. You know,
yeah.
they were scared.
Yeah,
I understand. That's all right. I'd be scared, too. It scared me a little bit, too, because, I mean, how different was that man than most of us?
But that's the point, is that we, you know, the point he made is that the love was there. He wasn't judged. He wasn't left in hell. And that's the point all these people are forgetting. they're not even seeing that point.
He was judged in a way.
Yeah,
as he was given this full life review, which is so common to so many of these experiences.
Everyone has that, yeah.
And if you really feel what you've dished out to others and or what you did yourself, that's a pretty tough way to go.
Oh, yeah, but the fact that he went through it and he got out of it and he had God's love through it. See, that's the thing that people miss, you know, that can happen. You can have God's love through it, no matter what you've done or what you've been through.
Well, some of us may not have been quite as good as
you don't have to. That doesn't have anything to do with being good. That's just my experience of being a hospice nurse, seeing a lot of people die and seeing them at the end of their lives.
I know, but the ears being ripped off with teeth and
biting. Well, yeah, but that all, you know, his ears, he woke up and his ears were fine. Anyway, that was my point, is that God can bring you out of that. You don't have to go there. Nobody has to go there.
Well, I guess that was the lesson of the story. Thank you very much. Yeah, sure. You betcha. That was really the lesson of the whole thing. All right. International line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Darwin, Australia, and I just wanted to let you know that I've got some black mold growing in my refrigerator.
Growing in your refrigerator?
My refrigerator.
Why would you want it growing there?
Well, I don't want it to grow there, it just does.
But your refrigerator is where you store your food.
Yes, but a few things have been left in there for a little too long. And I think they may be the cause of it.
Well, I can understand that after a while, anything will start to become mold, but this is an issue of personal hygiene, sir. I mean, are you just sort of fascinated with the way the mold is growing? Are you not concerned at all that the black mold is getting into some of your newer stuff?
Well, no, it was right up the back of the fridge where I hadn't ventured for a while.
Oh,
right down the back. It had fallen down the back.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, that's very different. Okay. Very different indeed. As long it's not actually inside the fridge.
Oh, no.
Oh, good, good, good. Yes, strange things can grow on the back of a refrigerator, and, of course, a decade can go by, and you never look at the back of your refrigerator unless something goes wrong with it, right?
Well, it could have been, I don't know, several years that it's been down there.
Is that how you found yours?
Well, yes, I started hearing these strange squeaking noises. I think it started to mutate and grow a life of its own back there.
You mean it started making noise?
Well, yes, it was. Sounded like a little mouse or something. I don't know if it was a mouse or if it was a mold. But...
No, my God. Nobody wants to think of mold making noise like a little mouse. You need a new refrigerator, my friend.
Yeah, well, I got rid of it, and I got a new one now.
Excellent. I hope you sent it along to the junkyard and not to your favorite charity. I mean, God, what a horrible thought. Listen, I got to run. Darwin, Australia. Imagine that. Black mold on the back of your fridge that begins to make noise. You know what? That's it for this week. I'm Art Bell from the high desert. Ta-ta.